world gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana. That's Casper, C-A-S-P-E-R. And once again, dear friends, we go into the breach. We are back with yet another multi-layered epic in our endless pursuit of providing you with the highest examples of the podcaster's art. One of the interviews from today came from a live show we did at San Francisco Sketchfest. That show features the great and hilarious Mike Lawrence. Follow him on the Twitter at @TheMikeLawrence. He is hilarious. Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall, one of those people that I can't believe I'm friends with. And our old favorite, friend of podcast, Arden Marine. Follow her on the Twitter at Arden Marine and get up to date on her live touring dates and television appearances. Faithful and true Eddie Pepitone is here. Follow him at Eddie Pepitone. Fans of my stand-up? And who isn't? Come on and swing by and see me in Chicago at the Up Comedy Club in March, from the 19th to the 21st. I will be in Atlanta at the Laughing Skull from April 16th to 19th, and in Austin, Texas, at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival from April 23rd to 25th. More dates, ticket information, and anything else you'd need are all at my website, danagould.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a podcast.
How do you get to a black box theater in the Mission? Bad management. Thank you. This is great. Thank you so much for coming out. We have an amazing show. We were all talking backstage, and I literally had to go like, shut up, everybody shut up. We have to do this on the show. It's too funny. I'll be very brief. Thank you very much for coming to the show. Thank you for listening to the podcast, if you do listen to the podcast. If you don't and you think that I am the Dana Carvey, you have a terrible hour ahead of you. I'm going to take you on a horrible journey. The podcast just shows you how the internet has changed our life. You know what's another aspect of life that the internet has drastically changed? It has greatly reduced the number of UFO abductions. If you remember, in the 1990s, we were chock-a-block with alien abductions because back then, aliens were only monitoring our television broadcasts, and that's all they knew of us. But now that the entire panoply of the human experience is on display on the internet, it's proven the age-old adage that the more people know about us, the less they want to hang. And now I envision aliens flying around there. Maybe we should go to that beautiful blue globe. Well, judging by our research on the internet, the planet is mostly populated by cats who can't judge the distance they're about to jump. But there's also a lot of carnage, chaos, corpse-fucking genocide, and two girls that play with diarrhea. And not the typical game that you normally play with diarrhea, which is, hey, let's get away from that diarrhea. Because as amazing as human beings are, it's important to remember that we are always judged by the depths of our depravity. No matter what we accomplish, it's the lowest end that always is what gets your attention. It's as if you had a friend, handsome guy, 6'2", blonde hair, granite chin, just a big, handsome guy, and a great guy, had a charity, couldn't pick up a check when he was in a restaurant, super great guy, but he had one eye missing. And in the socket, instead of a glass eye, he just had the socket. And inside it, you could clearly see a baby owl building a nest from twigs and bits of string. That would be all you could think about when it came to that guy. It didn't matter that he was a great guy with a charity. Even if he had a charity, they wouldn't even let him advertise it. You're probably looking at the baby owl building a nest in my eye socket. But I'm here to talk to you about being a big brother. So I had to stop doing all of my Bruce Jenner material. Because before he announced that he was transitioning, he was just a weirdo. When he was on the Kardashians, people were just like, what the hell is up with my, here's my Bruce Jenner joke. Thanks to plastic surgery, Bruce Jenner now looks exactly the way he used to look underwater.
I love that joke. That is just so true.
And people used to go like, what's going on with Bruce Jenner? Half the time he looks like a goddamn old lady. Actually, he's having surgery to turn into an old lady. Really? I greatly admire that. God, the world seems to be spinning so much smoother now. Which is fine. I'm happy for him.
Are you?
I am not happy for him. I'm happy for him. I don't admire him any less or more than I did before. I'll give him the ultimate statement of equality. I don't give a shit.
Oh, thank you.
I care as little about him as I do most people.
Oh, by the way, that is a brilliant statement because...
We're done.
Essentially because this is an example. All this celebrity gossip and the Kardashians, I think, are the poison tip on the dart of celebrity gossip.
So of all the people to now have to give privacy and dignity to, the one person who made those two concepts obscene.
Yes! It's like beautiful. I mean, that is so well put.
Yeah.
Is that the way that I'm going to get dignity is to change my sex? Do I have to change my... Because I have no dignity in my life. You know what I mean? I mean, kids are yelling at me when I power walk. Kids! No, I'm serious. When I power walk, and that's all I do, you know, and I'm heavy set, kids yell at me, hey, fat man, you look awful. Like, it's not even a witty... thing.
Yeah, they're not even clever about it.
They're just basically describing a circumstance. What do you say to that?
You know what my father would say? Keep walking.
But I might yell back at them, I am thinking of changing to a woman.
And then they're like, good, that's amazing.
Now, wouldn't that be funny good if for these you. Low-life kids...
I'm transitioning!
I'm transitioning into who I really am, which is a woman.
I think that that's what living with the Kardashians does. At some point, you just look in the mirror and think, I got to be a different person. You tap out like a wrestler. I'm done.
I have to pat myself on the back, or maybe not because I'm a comic and I should know more. But I turned the Kardashians off in my mind. Even when Kim Kardashian shows her ass on the internet, I will only see that through someone else. Like, I will not seek it out. These people are so inconsequential, and that's what I started to say. They are the tip of the poisonous dart.
Boy, because it's so hard to see someone's ass on the internet. What's the point?
You can see Harry Reasoner's ass anything. On the internet. Do you know Harry Reasoner?
News reporter? You go to harryreasonersass.edu. who gives a shit? Like, now you're so, hey man, can I have just a little bit of dignity? I don't know. The last time I saw you, you were taking a dump with a camera crew. I don't
know. Now, also, I got to tell you where I come from with Jenner. Being a sports fan, Bruce Jenner, the only way I know Bruce Jenner is because he was an Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
Many a year ago, and he was great.
1976, he was in the Wheaties box.
Was he a decathlon?
Yeah, he was a giant. Giant kick-ass athlete.
And he was, and that's when I was into the Olympics, and I was like, ah, this guy is great. And then this stuff started happening. I didn't even know he was part of this Kardashian empire of shit. And that's what it is. The Kardashian empire of shit, which is just like, look at us pretty people who are shrill and ridiculous. I mean, it's like,
I would argue pretty. To me, it's
it's
free
sexy, whatever it is.
Free speech comes at a price, and they are that price.
Can you describe it's reality TV again?
It's people, I've done this on stage, but for those of you who haven't heard it, people who aren't actors put into situations created by people who aren't writers. And they're reacting in the way they think you would like to see them behave if this was a real situation, which it's not. And you are passively observing it. You're watching an amateur production of nothing.
I fucking love that.
You are, by definition, barely alive. It's like watching a rerun of a golf match on television. But you are technically dead in six cultures. there's a new episode of the show. The one thing I get the most is, Dana, they come out too quickly. I've no sooner finished one than 6 weeks later there's another one. Let me bring out my guest. First guest is something I've never had before, a comedy partner. We originally worked together in the late 1990s on a show on NBC called Working, with Fred Savage that wasn't and was canceled. But we have stayed great friends. And I was, in fact, I'm proud to say, a maid of honor at her wedding. Please welcome Arden Marin. Also on the $1.99 dais that we really... I have to thank the Cat Abortion Clinic for lending us the operating table.
It's beautiful.
It's nice of them to take this out of the van. One of my comedy heroes, years ago I did a pilot. It was sort of a surrealistic pilot, and I had a character. It was my reflection in a mirror, but it wasn't me. It was clearly not me, and we'd have all these existential arguments. Can you tell it didn't get picked up?
Was it Two and a Half Men?
It was Two and a Half
Men. Here's the Half Man.
Yeah. It was called Nice Try Again. I'm just going to name them all Failed Attempt. They said, oh, maybe we get this guy. And I went, can we? And he said, yes. And it was like the highlight of the entire experience. Please welcome from Kids in the Hall, Kevin MacDonald.
It was a good show.
It was a good show.
Can I eat the
you
show?
Can see, I can get you a 3/4-inch VHS.
You should call it full-blown half-chub.
Our third guest is, quite frankly, one of my favorite new comedians. He's so goddamn funny. Fans of At Midnight will be very familiar with him. Please welcome Mike Lawrence, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
It was great hearing one of my favorite comedians and one of my heroes and going, oh, well, that's not me. I guess I'm waiting another minute. That was awesome.
What a really dear friend, and also Mike Lawrence is on the show. Now, your T-shirt makes me think of something I was realizing. Do you think Bill Cosby is angry that the guy from 50 Shades of Grey is treated
Wait, wait, wait. You realize
hero?
He's going to have killed himself by the time this airs.
That could be. What a great suicide note. I've decided to end the frizzle and the frazzle and the...
Oh, we...
That, the suicide note will have more Z's than any other suicide note in history.
If we could get Bill Cosby down to 50 Shades of Grey, we're at like 5,000 Shades of Grey right now.
You think he's bummed out by the 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, it's like everybody's talking about how this great hot movie about this guy that completely makes and objectifies and sexualizes this woman. And he's, but I was doing that for years and then people don't like it. I know there's a difference between drugging a woman and
entertainment.
And entertainment.
Suicide with a Z is a great title, by the way.
Suicide with a Z.
Yeah. Is 50...
I want to have the only suicide note that concludes with, well, anywho.
My dad read 50 Shades of Grey during New York during the hurricane. He used his battery flashlight to read 50 Shades of Grey in front of my brother and his like super Catholic wife, like in the middle of the living room. Just like, he's like a baby shaped accountant, and he just kept reading 50 Shades of Grey. And then anybody who would walk through, he'd look up and go, "Let me ask you a question. Have you ever made a woman blush?"
That book is literally written for the last group of people that don't know what U-porn is. Like, get ready for some light spanking for a few pages. Like, people shit on each other's chest right now. There's nothing, like, scandalous about that book.
I haven't had the pleasure of reading the book, but that is one thing that...
You love the audiobook.
The audiobook is...
There's no Asian felching, I could tell you that much.
The audiobook is read by Paul Stanley, and it's really... And then he tied it to the table, and it was very erotic indeed.
That sounds just like...
Then we sold out Budokan for 7 nights.
The 50th Shade of Grey is when I take my makeup off.
Who did you used to do? Who was the director that you did? You're Batman. You're Robin.
Oh, Joel Schumacher. It's a very quick story. Joel Schumacher, the man who killed the Batman franchise. I visited the set of Batman and Robin... Notoriously the worst movie of all time. And,
I think you just got hissing, which is, yeah. You know there's Dana Gould
fans
here.
The fact that I went to the movie was enough to...
I won't say it was cold that day, but it was nipply.
It was nipply. Well, this was the day that he was directing George Clooney. It was literally like, you're Batman, and Gotham is your town. And here comes Mr. Freeze, and he wants to take it from you, and you're not going to let him, but you're only going to show me with your eyes and action. And George Clooney, to his credit, was like, no, I got it.
The sad thing is, I could listen to you play that for hours.
And then he flew away on a pink fuzzy jetpack.
How funny is it, of all the things George Clooney has done, Batman Robin is probably still the most liberal.
Probably.
But so here's the weirdest thing. I was making fun of Joel Schumacher and my doing that impression, and my manager just goes, "He's a great guy, really great guy."
Oh boy.
And my manager is really funny and quite great. And I said, "No, I know, but this is nope. He's great. Gave me my start. He's a terrific guy." I said, "All right, okay, I believe you." So Christmas Eve party, my manager invites me to his house for Christmas Eve and sits me at dinner next to Joel Schumacher. And within 11 minutes, I was like, "You want to come to my house? I'll make you dinner. What do you want to..." He was like the greatest guy I've ever met in my life.
I heard that he's a great guy.
He was fantastic.
I heard he's great to you if you're not a fictional character beloved by millions.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
With nipples. Is he still alive?
He's still alive. He lives in New York, and I'm proud to call him a friend.
This is dedicated to you, Joel Schumacher.
Have you given a minimal amount of joy to children of all ages?
Yes, exactly.
Then we can be friends.
Yeah, I'm going to turn Santa Claus next into an erotic and sexually charged character.
See, I think as a huge fan of Batman, well, thin fan.
What?
Thin fan of Batman by Batman fan standards.
Hang on, let me react to the way most people react when you tell them you're a fan of comic books.
I'm going to try to keep my panties on.
So am I.
I had to cancel 3 screenings of Jupiter Ascending to be here tonight. Yeah. No.
Arden's making eggs faster than the Purdue factory. Go ahead.
The way that we like look at the 66 Batman and the way we look at Schumacher Batman, we're going to look at Nolan Batman the same way 10 years from now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there are moments in those movies.
Just so you know, this monologue has just been rated the leading cause of vaginal dryness.
I'm sorry, Kevin.
Sorry. my panties.
I like everything.
No, but I'm saying, like...
I have kids. Babe, I'm too tired to hate.
There are moments, especially in Dark Knight Rises, that are as goofy and horrible
completely.
As anything in Batman and Robin. The Bane voice...
It is Batman. It's not Potemkin. The movie is called Batman. You know who would be a great character to have in that movie?
The camera
Batman?
And when Batman looks in the camera and goes, "So that's what that feels like." That's as bad as your bat credit cards. That's as bad as your freeze puns. That's as bad as Coolio and the Neon Gang.
Coolio and the Neon Gang. By the way, Coolio and the Neon Gang are at the Wiltern tonight.
They don't do Celebration till the encore.
I read a review that said Batman 2 was as good as Godfather 2. And I do think it's good, Batman 2, but I have no joke. But here's my joke. But I don't think it's as good as Godfather 2.
I agree. That shows you how far the bar is lowered now. You couldn't make The Godfather today.
No.
I think every generation goes, "Oh, everybody's dumb now." But there are only three movies in production now that don't have Iron Man in it.
Yes.
And one of them is the second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
And they're putting Iron Man in it.
In a fair universe, there'd be three or four comic book movies a year. And there'd be three or four Godfather movies a year in a fair universe.
And you can enjoy them both.
Yeah.
Now, is anybody...
I'll take a Dirty Dancing.
And there'd be three or four Dirty Dancing
I want to go see Dirty Danzig.
I remember when I saw Kevin in Sky High by myself because that was all the comic book movies we had.
I was in a movie called Sky High that obviously nobody saw.
Yes!
What is Sky High?
I did. It was
it's not horrible at all.
High school. It's not, was fun.
The reviews are in. It's not horrible at all.
It's horrible at all.
Bruce Campbell's a drill sergeant.
Oh, okay.
It's super
well, that's
fun.
Good. Bruce Campbell, who called Larry Fine at the Screen Actors Guild home. One of the stories I said backstage, "We can't talk about this now. We have to say this." And now I brought it up, and I'm not going to tell you.
Can I?
You know why? Because I'm a teaser.
A lot of people, when they are on their deathbed now, instead of going to their light, instead of going to the light and a Buddhist-like death, like, you know, going to the great beyond, they are going to, like, you know, things like Kanye West at the Grammys. No one has any connection
to reality.
No one has any connection to a reality.
They die and their TiVo backlog flashes before their eyes.
Hey.
They just binge watch in that final moment. I'm dying. I just watched all of Fargo again.
But isn't this a result of the media? You said free speech. To me, it's like the explosion of reality TV coincided with our invasion of, like, Iraq. Like in other words, as real reality gets bizarrely violent.
Yeah, untenable.
And untenable. We get fed this just absolute shit. And it's also this Mark Burnett scumbag who started, was it Survivor?
Yeah.
You know, there's another whole thing about reality TV. They don't pay anybody anything. They're non-unionized, and it competes with sitcoms,
but he's
all
very
that stuff.
He's Christian, and they get paid in goodwill. And that's actually better.
But do you know what I mean?
They don't take it at Trader Joe's. You can't trade that at Trader Joe's. The only thing Trader Joe's will trade you is money for food. I found that
out. That's right. Trader Joe's is hard-ass about that.
I came in there with a whole bag of pelts. They wanted nothing to do with me. Do you want to parlay? No, just pay and leave. I don't understand it. My kids watch this Dance Moms show, and it's literally just like the dregs of humanity.
Careful, because your kids, you see, because you get hooked on the reality. The reality stuff is addictive the way is addictive.
I literally make them turn it off because I can't hear it. It's just like they have a horrible teacher that yells at kids, and then the moms yell at the teacher, and everything is the same. But you know it's all fake. You know they're having breakfast. Like, okay, today, Janet, you're gonna yell at Tracy, and Tracy's mom, Jean, you're gonna yell at Janet, and then you know, it's like it's all fake. It's
everybody,
like, if you're gonna watch a fake show, watch a good fake show. Watch Downton Abbey. That's a good fake show.
Oh, that's a good fake show.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a spoiler alert for anybody who's watching it, but ISIS. Lord Grantham's dog is not feeling well. And I'm like, why are they doing this to ISIS? Because I'm a big dog lover. I'm a big animal lover.
A terrible name for a dog now.
And me and my wife. Hey, where's Prometheus? Like, he just goes through this whole Greek tragedy. Where the hell is Hades?
The dog's name is Isis?
Oh, you don't watch Downton Abbey.
It was Al-Qaeda. And then it was named Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And then they changed his name to Isis.
Well, Isis is a Greek god as well. Yeah.
It's a woman.
It's a woman, yeah. You know.
I know that from the Shazam Isis Power Hour.
Is that true?
Yeah.
But getting back to this reality shit, it's like we are just fed this just unbelievable, it's like diversion. It's a retreat into fantasy as the world becomes this shithole of violence and unemployment and all this stuff.
I don't know if it is worse now than it has ever been, or if we are just at that age where we think it is, because I'm sure.
Yeah,
like, imagine how people must have felt in 1968.
What happened?
We thought we were going to win Vietnam, and then the Tet Offensive completely says, no, you don't have any idea what's going on over here. Civil rights is at a fever pitch. Martin Luther King is assassinated. 2 months later, Robert Kennedy is assassinated. Richard Nixon, who was a joke 2 years before, becomes elected president. Prague Spring. If the world didn't end in 1968, I don't know if it's ever going to end by the hand of man. Do people think, is it worse now than it is then, or is it all relative? Is it just, are we at the age now where we notice it? I do find that there are things that have, the polarization of our politics that has made everything impossible to do. If the White House caught on fire and Obama wanted a fire truck, they would go like, see, he can't lead. You know?
Can I tell you something, Dana, that I've been saving? Dana and I had dinner, and I didn't tell you this because I saved it for your podcast. Yesterday, I flew in to Oakland on Southwest. I don't want to brag. I was B28, so I'm kind of a big deal because I forgot to check in. When I got there, they were like, paging Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking, we're waiting for you for a plane. Southwest, Stephen Hawking.
How great would it be to see him pushed by one of those airport employees?
Oh, my God. I thought you would enjoy that.
Was he really on the plane?
It was like the plane that was boarding when I landed, but I became obsessed with like kind of like trying to hang out by like the Sunglass Hut and see if he was around. Who would have guessed he flew Southwest? I almost felt like the Oakland airport was fucking with me. Or it's like one of those Southwest, like the stewardesses that like to be crazy and tell jokes.
Yeah.
They just go to like, they page Stephen Hawking.
I sat today on my plane. I sat behind Mickey Dolenz, Monkees drummer. And I thought,
He's a monkey.
Yes.
To be somebody who is told on a regular basis by people that you're my favorite monkey, I just find strange. What about mandrels? Nope. You.
And didn't he almost get the part of Fonzie?
Oh.
Did he really almost get the part of
Fonzie? It was between him and Henry Winkler.
I didn't know that.
True boring story.
I know that. Do you know who almost won the part of Mike Brady? Lost it to Robert Reed?
Who?
Gene Hackman.
Whoa, that's true.
Yeah,
crazy.
True.
That's like what would that Mickey have been Dolan's like? Like, look, we know you're a teenage idol, but we're going to go with the old Jew.
Look, I know you're playing a tough thug in middle America. We're going to go with... He's decided to not become a rabbi, and he's going to be the tough guy. I worked with Mickey Dolenz in the same movie where I worked with Bruce Campbell.
My condolences.
Yay!
In
the same movie where I worked with Bruce Campbell. And the movie that it was called The Love Bug. It was a TV movie remake of Herbie the Love Bug with Bruce Campbell.
And was that with Lindsay Lohan?
No, it was one before that. It was before that. Was
that
the
would
one
have been with, the oddest with, combo yeah, of it was cast one
with Birdman and Lindsay Lohan. And then there was the one with Bruce Campbell and Mickey Dolenz and me. And
in that order on the poster.
In that order on the poster. But I still think that movie is probably more erotic than 50 Shades of Grey.
What did you play?
I played an evil henchman, and I beat up Herbie with a baseball bat. Boom!
Oh, yeah! You're a thug like Henry Winkler.
I drove Horace the hate bug.
Whoa!
You beat up a living machine?
I did. I was employed by the villain John Hanna from Four Weddings and a Funeral, and I spent the entire month of October with him in a car. Are any women here interested in seeing that movie?
What movie?
50 Shades.
Love Bug?
The Love Bug.
Could you have a VHS copy?
The Love Bug, Army, the original title of Angels in America. Does anybody here... I can edit. I edit this. Are any women here genuinely interested in seeing 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah, girl.
Did you read the book?
No.
Okay. I hear the book is written like a gold key comic.
It's
has
it's
read
Twilight
it?
Fan fiction. It's literally...
Well, you know that,
it's
right?
It's Twilight fan fiction.
It started off as Twilight fan fiction.
So basically, it's like you take the characters and you can write them into sort of a different scenario.
The Story of the Eye by George Bataille, or Bataille? Is that how you pronounce it?
Cocaine!
Was originally Quincy fan fiction between Quincy and Sam.
And American Sniper was Toby Keith fan fiction.
Whoa! Am I supposed to not like him?
Who? Toby Keith? Toby
Keith. Is it wrong that I don't care about the American Sniper either way?
Oh.
You know what? If he wasn't the American Sniper, someone else would have been. What are you going to have? No snipers?
Can I tell a quick Toby Keith story?
Yes,
this is
please.
Neither the time nor the place for an entertaining story.
First off, American Sniper is terrible. It's just Team America with people instead of puppets.
Are there still big cats in it?
Yes. I did a festival in Hawaii recently, and Toby Keith was like in the front row. We were like, what the fuck? And I was running a late night set and had a joke about him in it, which was like...
What are the chances?
Yeah.
Do you think he flew himself to Hawaii to confront you?
In his defense, that was the day he learned it was a part of America. But anyway, so I like mumble the joke and it goes fine. And then Kyle Kinane was on the show and he has this like 8-minute bit about Toby Keith.
No.
And he's like destroying, and then he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to do the bit. And he takes out all of the like non-slanderous Toby Keith parts of it. And we meet Toby Keith afterwards. He's a nice dude. And then we find out it was Mike Suggs, a professional Toby Keith impersonator.
Oh, no.
Who Kaiser Soze'd us into believing it was the real Toby Keith.
Wow.
Do you remember his name, Mike Suggs?
We looked it up, but because we got into a debate.
You were the victim of Operation Mindfuck. I had that with Elvis Presley 3 weeks ago.
Who benefited more off 9/11 than Toby Keith impersonators? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Did he pretend to be Toby Keith backstage?
Yeah, he never came backstage.
If you believe those buildings were ever really there.
Okay, first.
I would say being a Stephen Hawking impersonator would be worse.
That's just a speak and spell.
Yeah. Speaking of that, how is he not playing the Elephant Man on Broadway? Go ahead. You know who's a terrible person? The parents of the Elephant Man. I'm doing your scar joke to you, and you don't even know it.
I appreciate it. Even when he was like 5, they still call him the Elephant Man.
Yeah, that is like,
but I haven't even had a bar mitzvah yet. But yeah, he totally mind-fucked us. Well, we started to wonder, and then we had to ask the festival. It was just because it was like, because we found the story of how he came to the show, which was that he was at the Ramada Inn that we were all staying
that
at.
That should have been
Stop
a tip-off that it wasn't the real Toby Keith.
Yeah.
Hey, Toby Keith is a regular dude.
The time behind the donut store on Gower, I was blowing Cher by the dumpster, and I thought, this isn't really Cher.
It was Rita Rudner.
Exactly.
Wait. Wait, can we just point out that more people groaned at Rita Rudner than they did the 9/11 joke a minute ago?
Wow.
Rita Rudner, never forget.
What if an entire row of Rita Rudner impersonators just stormed out of here?
Is he a Toby Keith cover band? Like, does he play music, or does he just make appearances at parties things?
They do, like, different reviews and stuff. Which, by the way, is weird because reviews usually have, like, Cher and Lady Gaga and all these, like, gay icons. And then, here's Toby Keith for the portion where you hate yourselves.
Who's Toby Keith? Yeah.
He got into a fight with one of the Dixie Chicks.
Yes.
Oh, that guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Al Franken had actually a really great observation in his book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. I love the country, but I love the country in the way I love my parents. It's flawed, but I believe it can do better over time, and I love it despite its flaws. Right. It's just like the fact that if you have anything wrong for the country, get out. No. I won't. Barry Crimmins has the best answer to that. If you don't love America, get out. Then I'll be victimized by our foreign policy.
Good job.
Good job. See, I love my country the way I love my grandparents. It doesn't sadden me anymore to watch it die.
In fact, it's kind of funny. Just like my grandparents.
I think it's gotten worse because as we've progressed with the internet and soundbite, it's really, really a soundbite culture, which is why these right-wing douchebags or the polarization happens, because none of them have to back up their lies. They just go, they just say a statement and they say it forcefully, whatever Obama is doing. Yeah. And people are like, yeah, that sounds good. You know why? Because he said it forcefully. I mean, you ever watch a State of the Union? And I'm no big fan of Obama either, but because I feel like I had so much hope when he was elected, and I feel like he didn't stand up to a lot of people I wanted him to really stand up to, like FDR style. But anyway.
Yeah, well, I think that he was a bit of a Rorschach test. I think that people saw in him what they wanted to see in him. And actually, he...
I saw the change I wanted to be.
Right. Well, here's a weird...
I was excited when he got elected because we were coming off the most evil man on the planet, George W. Jr.
A truly inept president.
And into an elegant black man.
A very elegant black man. But I think it was the Adlai Stevenson presidency we didn't get in the 1950s.
Yeah.
I think he's a very... moderate. I mean, he's a lot like JFK, and the fact that he's very inspirational and in who he is. And as president, JFK managed to accomplish almost nothing.
Yes. He escalated Vietnam.
He did defuse the Cuban Missile Crisis over the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who would have led us into nuclear annihilation. But the most important thing that Obama did, he doesn't really get credit for, which is he prevented our economy from going into a profound and massive depression. People don't realize how close to the edge of the cliff we were really on the brink of disaster. And the fact that you and I aren't hovering over a trash can fire right now selling apples is a testament to what he did. God, this is funny.
No, it doesn't have to be funny
all
the time.
Yes, it does. I'm cutting all of this.
I was told as a stand-up, look, you don't have to be funny all the time, but you do have to be interesting.
I was told the same thing, but you do have to
try doing that. And
you have to be sexy was what I was told.
Is that true?
Yeah, no, Bob, there's a really a great comedian named Bob Nickman.
Oh, I know that name.
Yeah, Bob Nickman said to me, I might not be the funniest guy. Let me rephrase that because I don't want to make Bob sound like a dick. I don't care if I'm the funniest. I like to be the most interesting. He was modest about it. But, I mean, I'm not excited about who the next president is.
Oh, me neither anymore. It's like dating someone. Like, you're like, this is the person. This is finally the person. Because it is like a date when you get a new president. It's like, okay, where are we going tonight? Ooh, State of the Union? That's nice.
Obama's like, you meet the sexiest girl. And you finally get her in bed, and it's just starfish. That should be his Secret Service code name, should be starfish. Starfish is moving. I wonder if the Secret Service, if they're in charge of the code names, and if they're dicks, if they can, like, fuck with you. Mr. President, you're a hobo penis? What? Mr. President, please, it's for your own safety. You are hobo penis.
Hobo penis.
And Mrs. Obama is skunk vomit. Now, sir, this is for your own safety. Hobo penis and skunk vomit are going to the theater.
We buried my grandmother with a cigarette in her hand. We had to bump from my 13-year-old cousin at the graveside. So that's what she wanted.
Oh, my grandmother, the open casket, she started bleeding.
What?
She started bleeding, and I was six, and it freaked me out. Yeah. And apparently, here's my punchline for this story, it's normal.
What do you mean?
Apparently, it's normal.
What? Where from the eyes?
She started bleeding from the eyes. That's what it was.
No!
She started bleeding from the eyes.
Close the casket!
Yeah.
Glass eye! Close the casket!
It was horrifying.
Can we all? Can
and
we
then
all
Tom
just...
Savini came out from under the casket.
Can we all just talk about the concept of an open casket funeral for just a few seconds? Just to warm the ladies back up after the Batman rant?
Wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. Has anybody else seen the bloody eyes? Is that really a thing?
Apparently it's normal. Am I the only one?
That sounds like something you would just say to placate a hysterical six-year-old. It's normal. It's normal. She's speaking backwards. Yeah, it's normal.
I was obsessed last year because I'm a little claustrophobic, and I always kind of wanted just to be like put like pipe cleaners in me, and you can sort of put me in jaunty outfits like when I die, like you know, Mr. Peanut. But now there was that lady that did that, like in Puerto Rico. There was a picture of her, like she was like a thug. She was the best. She had like beer cans and she had her Pall Malls and she was all just stuffed, and you could go. It was amazing. I'd like that to happen to me.
Weekend at Bernice's. Yeah.
Just do like the Dirty Dancing movie. You could just like have me held up, like and have and just like put nobody, well, somebody put baby in the corner, and it was Jesus.
Here's the thing with Weekend at Bernie's. How come no one ever noticed the smell?
What? Good point.
Yes. Finally.
I realized.
Finally, somebody.
It's a good movie.
Finally, somebody found a hole in that movie.
It was just truthful.
You can't look at any movie too closely. By the way, Jaws, where's the Coast Guard?
Yeah. Terry Kaiser, right? Terry Kaiser's Bernie?
Terry Kaiser, yeah.
I did a convention once when the Kids in the Hall show was still on. That's how bad the money we made. And we did where we, Paul Bellini, you know, Paul Bellini, the guy in the towel? Him and I were the only ones that would do it. We went to the airport in Toronto, and we had the smallest line, and there was a giant line. It was Terry Kaiser selling Weekend at Bernie videos. What? True story. And there was a Playboy bunny, and she got a little more than Terry Kaiser. I remember that.
I would hope.
Did you feel bad about yourself? Like, I always wondered if you actually start to feel bad. Did you care?
No, because Bellini and I got drunk on the drive there.
That's
yeah,
amazing.
You're fine. Who was the Playboy bunny?
She was the Miss of that year, whatever, the Miss 1992 or something.
I only know him from the late 70s. My dad had a lot of Playboys in his room, and I don't want to think about dad with a boner.
Yeah. Looking at women with like a bush, like a canned ham.
Yeah.
You mean you don't want to think about your origin story?
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to go to Dana Begins. I don't ever want to see Dana Begins. A lot of those women looked like Lenny Kravitz was tying their shoes.
When the Playboy article came out with a John Lennon interview, my mother, I had to get it, but my mother...
Barbara Bach was on the cover.
Yes.
Who's that?
Is that true?
Barbara Bach was Ringo Starr's wife.
Oh, okay.
And she was promoting the movie Caveman, directed by Carl Gottlieb, who wrote Jaws. It all comes around.
Well, my mother bought it for me, which is a funny thing, and then she...
Wow, how old were you?
I was 16, and she cut out the pages of the John Lennon thing, and she just gave that to me. But I never knew what happened to the rest of the Playboy magazine.
So. See, my mother would just cut the eyes out of the women and leave everything. We could jack it all day, but just don't view them as people. That way you have something in common with them.
I feel like everybody's dad had it for the article.
Yeah, my dad didn't have Playboy, actually. My dad had Penthouse, which was a little more...
That's naughtier, right?
Yeah, it was... it will turn you off cold cuts.
Right.
It's like my dad just had pictures of his ex-wife.
That must have been thrilling to his current wife.
It was amazing, yeah, because my parents met in San Francisco, and this was like the happiest place my dad ever was. And my dad was like a recovering alcoholic, and I remember growing up, and we would watch Full House on TGIF on Friday nights. And my dad would just talk about how great the 70s were and how amazing San Francisco was before my mom dragged him to Florida and ruined it all during Full House.
I gotta say, I think I'm with your dad on that one.
They would do exterior shots on Full House, and my dad would be like, oh, that's where I bought Coke.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Culture in the 70s. I just watched. It's amazing. It was incredibly liberal, but in other ways, it was so far behind us. And there were things that you couldn't do today, and it was only 40 years ago. For example, like I was just watching this documentary on Richard Pryor. And they talk about like he had this variety show in the late 70s. And it was heavily censored by NBC. And the premise of this show was like, here's this genius. And they didn't let him do what he wanted to do. And wasn't it a terribly repressed time? And then they interview him. And he's like, yeah, man, I want to do a sketch about faggots. We couldn't do a sketch about faggots. But he was just saying that like he was saying people from Borneo, who I wanted to talk about. Like, he made a movie called The Toy in 1983, where Jackie Gleason's son is given Richard Pryor as a present. You know, the 80s, I think the Emancipation Proclamation was known then, right?
I just rewatched Blazing Saddles, and you definitely could never make that.
You can't. It's amazing how much has changed in such a telescoped period of time.
You couldn't do All in the Family. You couldn't do All in the Family now.
Yeah. The Civil Rights Movement, which was so incredibly forward-thinking, but they were incredibly homophobic. Things move along at a different rate. I'm fascinated by how everybody thought Bruce Jenner was a fucking lunatic until he decided that he was transitioning, and then everybody shut the fuck up real goddamn quick.
Isn't Kanye worried about losing a second mom to surgery?
I think.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Look what he had to do to get his dignity back after being in the Kardashian family. He had to literally just become someone else. It was like a new dealer at blackjack. He just looked at the mirror after the divorce and went just like, I'm out. I have to become someone else. It did look like the third generation silly putty stretch of Bruce Jenner.
Because he went from being on E to transforming into everyone who watches E. He's becoming his own audience.
That's true.
That's true.
Most people don't hate the president. There's a very small amount of people, even Republicans, they don't hate him. But there's this small voice of people in the media that have microphones, and that the more they seem to hate him, the more they stir up shit, and the more people watch, and then the more they can sell Tide or All Temperature or whatever it is that they're selling. And it's a completely cynical, you know, it's like Ted Cruz, and now I'm talking about like Bill O'Reilly and Fox
Ted
News.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Like, you know, Bill O'Reilly doesn't really believe everything he's saying. It's a show. And the fact that people do believe what he's saying, he doesn't give a shit. That's, to me, the moral quandary. And I think in the same regard with – but like Ted Cruz, like Ted Cruz knows he's lying. But he doesn't seem bothered by the fact that people don't know that he's lying and they take what he says at face value. And can he possibly believe he will be elected president? 21% of the people will follow you into a volcano, and the other 79% of the people don't give a flying fuck about you. Yes. You know, so I don't understand. I think there's a little bit of you drinking your own Kool-Aid there.
Even though I think the level of dumbness that Fox and guys like Cruz perpetuate, because their strategy is just to lie. Like, that's just a strategy. We're just going to lie about it. We're just going to say, this is good. This is good for jobs, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I think, though, the dummies who watch these shows and believe these shows, their hatred, like you said, a lot of people, they don't really hate the president. I think there are a lot of people out there. You know, these birthers, the Trump. By the way, the fact that Donald fucking Trump gets to speak.
But that's 21% of the people. You know,
that's true.
It
isn't a huge.
No, there's a small minority that are gonna hate him consistently.
Right.
But then they hated Clinton, and now they say Clinton was a great president. That's their business. That's their business model. Rick Overton said a great thing, and I'm paraphrasing it, but it's really true. It's like, the country is a Mack truck, and every 4 years we vote on whether or not to put a bulldog or an eagle on the hood. There's a minority of people that will always hate whoever is the president, and especially the right wing. That's just their job. They don't even know why. I mean, it used to be there is no climate change. Now it's, well, yeah, there is, but we don't know what caused it. They just move the lie along. You know, on the other side, too, like, clearly I'm progressive, but I got to be honest with you. I know she's incredibly intelligent and she means well, but I cannot watch Rachel Maddow.
Oh my God.
Laughing at Rachel Maddow anymore.
Thank you, because I am on the same page as that, and I don't care how smart or liberal she is. Her quote-unquote funniness is just the worst.
So it just, and she
wants to be Jon Stewart.
Yeah, but Jon Stewart doesn't crack himself up to the point that he gained. And this is what happened.
But by the way, can I?
You don't have to be hilarious. It's okay. It's like your aunt who wants to sing at a wedding. You can't sing. Don't sing, Aunt Lenore.
She's so unfunny.
No, you don't have to be
funny.
She's
doing the news.
Yeah. And then she does the show before her under a different name. She's Chris Hayes, and then she's Rachel Maddow.
I love that.
And again, like, this is my team. Like, I want to, like, but I don't. Right. Like, it's not my team. Just tell me what the fuck happened, and I'll decide for myself. Blazing Saddles, like, you could not make Blazing Saddles today.
No.
It's so fascinating. Kevin and I were both movie ushers.
True story. I ushered the toy, actually.
For the toy. And all of those movies that, like, nowadays just, ha, ha, and then you watch them and you're like, Jesus Christ. Shut this off.
Yeah. We both ushered Jaws 3D.
We both ushered at Jaws
3D. Different cities.
With the Quaid that doesn't look like Santa Claus fucking Patti Smith.
Oh my God, can we talk about that?
No.
Patti Smith.
That was awful.
Did you see that?
It was awful. Yeah.
That was as closest as I'll ever come to seeing an ISIS beheading video.
Honestly.
like something that cannot be unseen.
I wish I didn't see that. I wish I could take back time. If I had a time machine, that is what I would use it for. To go back and not hit play on that. I didn't know what it was. It got emailed to me. I regret that more than I regret when Bobby Lee sent me Two Girls, One Cup and I didn't know what it was.
Oh, did you watch it?
I didn't know and I watched it. I was like, oh. I think that the Quaid video was worse.
Yeah, I think so. Because Two Girls, One Cup is, if nothing else, they're happy in who they are.
Yeah, I love a certain dessert.
I just call that ultimate recycling, yes.
Do you think they're ever going to auction the cup off at, like, Sotheby's or something? Someone's got to own that cup.
Yeah.
I've never seen Two Girls in a Cup, and I hope I never see it, but I can tell you.
Two Girls, one, they're not in the cup. How'd they get in the cup?
They're in the cup with the Fruit of the Looms. I just find it astounding at how far things have changed in such a short amount of time. And now, especially with trans culture, it's that it happens, like, because of media in a year. It's like gay marriage, like, became in 2 years, was like from this never to
I was watching last night in the hotel. I was watching, like, a Law and Order came on, and, like, you could never say that, like, 10-year-old repeat or whatever. They're like, well, he's retarded. What am I watching? You know, I didn't quite realize that they were talking about, you can't do that.
There was a mentally challenged kid in my grandmother's neighborhood named Joseph, and they called him JoJo.
Aww.
And my grandmother calls mentally handicapped people JoJo boys. Also, just so you know how I grew up, my grandmother, God rest her soul, my mom grew up in Virginia. When we were kids, there were these candies in Massachusetts made by this company called Brock's. And they were little chocolate-covered coconut domes. Imagine that. Put that image in your mind.
That sounds tasty.
Yeah.
That
sounds good.
I like
and
flavors.
And because of my grandmother, my brothers and I would call them nigger tits.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question.
And then one day...
You couldn't say that now on this podcast, by the way.
This is 1972, 3.
Yeah.
And then one day, and this is why it's an awesome story, my mother decided that we probably shouldn't be speaking like that. And we were told to call them...
No.
Nigger toes.
No. Oh, my God. You grew up in Massachusetts, and I grew up in...
Yes, which is famous for being very open-minded and racially accepting.
And I grew up next door in Rhode Island, but I
biggest
went
Biggest little state in the Union.
Biggest little state in the Union, but I basically... everything happened in Massachusetts, and I went to school in Massachusetts, and we had a gym teacher that was a former Marine drill sergeant. He'd be like, all right, you little pussies, you get over here, you know. And we played... Did you guys play? It was just a common... Like, some, you know, you play kickball, and then sometimes you go play softball. And, like, on fun Wednesdays, it was like, all right, everybody, hustle up. It's time for Smear the Queer. You would play, which is what they call dodgeball. It was Smear the Queer. Yeah. And you were the queer.
But it was
Q-U-I.
Queer.
Yeah, you smear the queer. Get over here. Like, that was in the 80s. Did you play that?
We did, and Boston was so full of hate. Being in Massachusetts, if you weren't a queer, you were a retard.
Yeah.
It's the only thing you could do. If you were a normal guy on a date, you would be, see that queer, he's retarded. How do you know? He's out with a girl. He's so fucking queer. He's queerly retarded if he's a queer with a girl. I mean, there's no other way to be normal.
My mom used to dress me in those pants, the little knickers that are like, and I remember being at the roller rink. People were like, hey, I like your weird pants, you know? And I had a sweatshirt that said heaven. They're like, heaven? What's that? What's heaven? You and your weird pants, fucking queer dad.
My mother dressed up my sister as Aunt Jemima for Halloween in about 74. By the way, Aunt Jemima, still out there.
Yeah. Did you
By the way, Popeye's lady, way fucking worse.
Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Did you
She's
guys,
the worst.
Remember when Denny's was called Sambo's? Did you go to Sambo's?
No, was Denny's Sambo's?
Denny's was Sambo's.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and they had like
and then it was Sam's, that. And then they went, no, just, yeah, it's oh, no, yeah, yeah. not helping.
Yeah,
not helping.
I grew up in the early 90s when all the guilt was starting to surface, and it was weird because, like, you were trying to overcompensate and not know how. So, like, I remember learning about Black History Month and all of that, and I remember there was one time when I just learned about Rosa Parks, and this black girl comes onto the bus, and I was like, this seat is for you, man.
Right on. Like, right on.
I tried so hard to like be like understanding and compassionate. I was like a kid, and it was just like, it was way worse. I grew up in Florida, where it's still
best state ever.
Yeah.
It is America's sluttiest state.
Oh, God, it's the worst.
Just as a personality, Florida is slutty. I'm slut-shaming a state.
I did the improv in, Tampa, or where is it?
You don't have
Fort
to lie
Lauderdale.
To impress me.
But I had a guy, it's the only time, like, it's a female comic on the road where a guy actually came up. He was head-to-toe Ed Hardy. He had flame jeans with, like, bedazzled, like, a dragon ring on. He goes, hey, I didn't want to listen to woman comedy, but I enjoyed looking at your ass for 45 minutes. And I'm like, well, why did you
well, thank
come to
you,
my
sir.
Show?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been married for 3.5 years.
And that took place in the 20th century?
That took place like 2 years ago.
10 years ago, I worked at McDonald's for way too long. So there was a time when I was in the drive-thru, and a woman wouldn't leave the drive-thru because we gave her a black Barbie doll in the Happy Meal.
No.
It's like Saturday, like 1 p.m., lunch rush. Because I was like, I'm not going to do it. She's taking this, and he's like, I'll do it. And then he got her the white one and gave it to her.
Oh, my God.
The customer's always white. But it was the fucking worst. The shitty part where it's like, when you watch like adults being racist by themselves, like there's a sadness, but when they're doing it and there's a kid, it's just like,
I can't.
I remember January 26th, 1989. It was the first day of the kids in the hall. We got a writer's office and we were starting to write our show. And then Scott Thompson read an article. This is not a funny story again. Scott.
That's a terrible name for your CD, by the way.
Kevin McDonald, this is not a funny story. And he read an article in the Toronto Star, and it was about a new thing, and they just thought of a name of it. It was called political correctness.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I remember Scott being very happy, and he said, we're going to be controversial now. There's this thing called political correctness. We'll shove it up their asses. But nobody watched our show, so it didn't matter.
Everybody watched your show, and people were led to buy Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet CDs because of your show.
Yes,
they
good band.
They still have them.
Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet went to, they did the music for our show. They were a rock band. They went to high school with Bruce McCullough, and Bruce McCullough, when he was drunk one day in grade 11, said, if I ever get a TV show, you guys are going to do the music for it. True boring story.
That's an awesome story.
I also can't take Chris Matthews. You do a good Chris Matthews.
I love Chris Matthews because he's clearly insane.
He's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw him on Nantucket once. I was hanging out.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And this isn't to brag, and I want people to know out there I'm not dropping this, but I did The Odd Couple for a summer there. And
you played both Pigeon Sisters.
They combined both Pigeon Sisters and just made me into a pig.
play? You were in the what theater? What little theater?
It was in a church basement.
Of course it was. That's fantastic.
It was amazing because I had never, you know, suffice it to say, my background, my Staten Island background, Nantucket to us was just
Mars.
It was Martha's Vineyard was a little more attainable, but Nantucket was, that's where those people go. My dad would say.
Yeah.
Eddie, we can't go there. But it was amazing. I swam the whole summer. It was so great.
This is a part of my gritty urban background. I actually like the beaches of Nantucket better than the beaches of Martha's Vineyard.
But why did I bring it up?
We were talking about Rachel Maddow doing The Odd Couple.
Oh, I just ran into Chris Matthews.
You ran into Chris Matthews.
Yeah, and he just talked the same. Hey, how you doing? Quick.
I met him at Real Time with Bill Maher. I went, Chris, Dana Gould, nice to meet you. Dana Elcare. You ever see him? And he just started listing famous people named Dana. Dana Andrews, Best Years of Our Lives. You ever see that movie? Great movie. Dana Andrews.
Oh.
Dana Andrews. Candy. People like candy. Just free association. I like to do it. I wish I had wings, like wicker wings that would like live in my armpits, and then I could like wheel them out with the power of my mind, and I could fly. If you could fly, would you solve crimes or would you report traffic? I don't know.
How about it?
I have to go now. Wait a minute. Get in the truck of my car.
Go carts. Go carts.
Go carts are fun. Kidnapping. Where did they get that term? No one's napping. You're too stressed out to nap.
How about his wife late at night? Late at night, she's taking off her jewelry. You know, she's in the bedroom with him, and she's just going, God damn it, Chris, stop free associating wherever we go. It's a pain in the ass.
Please let him die tonight. God.
S. Harry Reisner.
Sleeping. Sleeping. Computers go to sleep. You put your computer to sleep. Why can't I go to sleep? Am I a computer? Does red equal five?
But he's another of the MSNBC team, which is just a weird... They started off with fucking Joe Scarborough.
Yeah.
Doing his right-wing crap.
Didn't he kill somebody?
Is that true?
I think like he buried his intern. I don't want to cause any rumors, but I think he buried somebody alive or some weird thing. I think, as a child, he killed the Black Dahlia. I'm not 100% sure. But I find as I get older, I listen to I need the news less and less and less. Like, because it just doesn't matter. It's like, yeah.
Now, how do you take that, though? Like, as a comedian, though, part of me is like, oh, shit, I should know the news. But then I realize it's kind of the same storylines with different names plugged in.
It's like,
you have to do is know the storyline.
To me, it's you don't need to be outraged every day.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, it's draining, by the way.
It's draining, but it's like, it's drama. Like, today, Ted Cruz said, like, I don't care. He said, yeah, it's his job.
Well, it's unbelievable.
He's a car salesman. He's going to lie to you about the odometer. That's his job.
Another thing that's unbelievable in today's, like, I just got this, like, something on my phone that said, if you want breaking news alerts sent to you, subscribe here.
I'm just thinking
breaking news. You could have breaking news in the shower. You could have breaking news when you're in surgery. You could have breaking news. They're going to have breaking news when you're asleep. Like someone just, you know, there's just going to be an electrical pulse sent through your house walls that, you know, the way, you know, the army can, you know, vibrate things, and the army can do everything. By the way, I want to tell people right now, the army and the Pentagon can do everything. They could vibrate your house and just go, something about Bruce Jenner in a car crash. Like that's all you hear at 3 in the morning.
But
like, what?
Yeah.
What? You're having a dream where a clown is chasing you naked with a scissor, and you're waking up to, like, breaking news about Bruce Jenner in a car crash.
But it would quickly be, like, Huffington Post-level breaking news. Eddie, wake up. Gwyneth Paltrow rocks it in a bright yellow sundress.
By the way, what happened to Huffington Post? I thought they were supposed to be above that
shit. They wanted to make money. No, now that's... And it's all these... They have these... Things they know make people click. People love lists.
They do.
So that's always like 25 actors who look older than they did 10 years ago.
By the way, I fall for that shit too.
Yeah,
I fall
nature.
For that shit too.
But it's of course they look older. Of course they look old. It was 10 years ago.
That's like my father watching the Oscars.
People who've aged over time. What? How dare they?
My father watching the Oscars, this is all he has to say about anybody. God, he's getting old.
Oh, geez.
That's all he does. My father, 82 years old,
yeah.
Just hanging on by a thread, watching Jennifer Aniston movies. He watches Cake with a Chardonnay, with a bottle of Chardonnay, just going, God, I like her, Ed. And but my
dad, I don't think that Matthew McConaughey is ever going to launch.
Ice cream bars. It's the handy way to enjoy smooth, rich, creamy ice cream. Get some.
Welcome to Political Talk with two guys from Boston. A working man's look at the socio-political issues of our day. And now, Political Talk with two guys from Boston.
This is Political Talk with two guys from Boston. I'm Johnny Condon.
Robbie Sullivan here.
So I'm over my mother's, and I'm sitting there, and she's got this cat.
Yeah.
Here's the thought that goes through this cat's mind.
Hmm?
That guy over there probably wants to look at my butthole right now.
Because he showed it to you?
He gets up on my chest. Here you go.
Oh, that's weird.
Only cats do that. By the way, you are probably wondering about this. My shit port. Have a gander. Is there any way I can get this underneath your eyelid? Because I wouldn't want you to miss it when you blink.
Now, how old a cat is that?
This cat, she got this cat when Johnson was the president. I don't know how old
it is. Yeah, that's what I'm
and
saying.
And it's missing giant.
I think as cats get older, some of their graces go away.
It's missing giant clumps of fur.
Or as elegant as they once were.
It's got one eye. It's missing big clumps of fur. It could have been quietly replaced with a goblin. It doesn't. Meow and more, just goes, ah, ah.
My instinct about a cat is you never like them until you meet them. And then you go, well, that cat.
That one's
good.
Okay.
That's a good cat.
Yeah.
He's like a dog.
Well,
that's what I've heard people say about cats they love. This cat's
yeah,
totally
he's got like
cool.
a dog.
He's like a dog.
They say
Why'd you get a dog? They're really a lot like a dog.
Yeah, dogs.
They're so much like dogs. They are dogs.
Dogs are more like dogs than any cat.
So much more.
So much
it's
more.
It's weird, and they don't do that thing with the butthole. They're just looking for a snack.
They say
yeah?
that a cat is the only animal that can sit on your lap and ignore you.
That's not true. My yeah, girlfriend
say,
can do that.
I was going to say, none of the guy who said that has never been to the Spearmint Rhino.
Yeah. Honey, when you sit down here, oh, that's that's funny. I just realized what that was. At first, I thought it was a powerful mint.
But what I don't understand is if we have all this technology that, you know what, like robotic surgery now?
Oh,
they
yeah.
can put little microbots in your system.
Well, they say they're
going
to put stuff in our systems to like fight cancer.
Right.
Like they can do this.
Why can't they genetically develop a dog that can use the goddamn toilet? It does not seem to me to be that difficult a challenge.
How many homes do we go into to change the heating or work on the air conditioning? And there's a big pile.
Right in the house. You will go into the most beautiful house in the world, and in the middle of it, there's just, in a bathroom or someplace, a big cardboard box with some sand and some shit in it.
And it's got that high ammonia smell.
Oh, God.
It ruins a home.
Oh, nothing is more, you know, World War II would have ended so quickly if we just rained down on Germany and Japan water balloons full of cat pee. They would have. That's enough.
And I've had enough.
That's enough. Oh, nothing.
No more.
Cat piss is.
I actually
skunk.
Am picturing right now Hitler getting a cat balloon
oh,
full of
God.
Piss on his head and then saying to everyone around the world, all right, it's over.
Yeah. Super soaker full of cat pee.
No more.
You can hold up any bit. You can hold
I
up any bag in the country. Super
I was
full
wrong
of
what
pee.
I did. I see it now from the actions that have been taken against me.
Nothing smells more.
Oh, there's something really weird.
Oh,
it's like a 60-year-old hobo who drank coffee all day, had a fifth of gin,
yeah.
and now he's peeing on your head.
Yeah. And then he had just a dash of Clorox.
Yeah, that's right, because it's got that high ammonia
yeah.
smell.
It smells like Tylex.
Well, you know what else is when it hits the gravel or whatever they put in there.
Sure.
It gets worse, not better.
Now, at some point, they decided, we have to train cats so that they go someplace. Let's do it in this box of dirt.
Why in the house?
Why not train them to use the toilet?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're starting from a dead stop,
I
go right to the toilet.
I think we'd have to get a cat toilet because I'm picturing a lot
Why
of cats
Why not have
falling
a cat
in.
Toilet?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
No,
is
I think
that
it works.
Is that what's keeping it?
You can teach a cat to flush. If they pushed a little flush button and a snack came out, oh, Christ, they'd do it all day.
If you invented a cat toilet,
yeah.
a small, low-to-the-ground cat
small.
Toilet,
yes.
except to plumbing,
yes.
you know, everything done,
yeah.
cat, and you hit the tag and a mouse comes out.
Oh.
I'm not going to work tomorrow.
No, but I think that's also
going
to change cats' diet. They're going to want to go to the bathroom.
Right, and here's where the smart money is.
Yeah.
people in mouse husbandry.
Wait, what?
Once these things go,
yeah,
the real money is going to be, once you sell a toilet, you're done.
Yeah.
You only sell that once.
Okay, Johnny, I lost you.
Okay, but mice, you got to keep selling them.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. The real money is in the mice.
Right.
Yes.
So we need, you and I.
Create an addiction.
Instead of putting all of our time and effort into the toilet,
we'll
which is
mice.
Science and engineering
we'll buy mice.
And plumbing, you and I go straight to mouse husbandry.
Oh my gosh, I'm in.
We get a couple of mice. We get a little place in Vermont. Whatever kind of music Mike likes.
Why not just get a house in Vermont and let it get overrun?
Yeah, and then you just tent it.
Yeah.
Turn it upside down.
Sure.
Shake all the mice out.
Yeah.
And you're done.
And you have someone go in and pick them up like eggs in the morning.
But we have to keep track of the development of the cat toilet.
All
otherwise, right. People come up, what's with the 10,000 mice? Well, they're for the cat toilets.
Yeah, what
we
cat
never invented
toilets?
Those.
We've missed
oh,
that part.
Oh, shit.
No, we were trying to get ahead of ourselves.
Right,
okay, one point to make, though. I don't want that cat toilet in my toilet. You
understand? No, it's next
I don't
to your
want
toilet.
To go in the morning, pick up my paper, go to the restroom, be sitting there and look over and there's a cat reading
yeah,
the paper
for
too.
The, no.
You know what I mean? I want my own time in there and I don't want him looking at me.
Reading the cat news.
Yeah, I don't
no,
want that.
No cats hurt in explosion in Pakistan.
Exactly. You know, the newspaper's supposed to be for that. Remember, they used to put down the newspaper for the cats.
Right. Now it's just a tiny toilet to the left of your toilet.
Yeah.
Cat goes, you go, everybody's happy.
I think we should get a painting of it as like a speck. And put it up here in our office at Bevel Aqua.
A drawing.
When people come in, they might see it and go, I'll invest.
What is that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the cat toilet.
I'm looking for investments. We should go, you and I, we should get Bevel Aqua with us. The three of us go on Shark Tank and pitch this. Are you kidding me?
All right.
I think it's a hit. I think we could probably buy 10,000 mice and start from there.
Yeah.
Get to 100,000 by next Wednesday.
You can buy 10,000 mice.
Yeah.
Or buy a dozen horny male mice. And a dozen female mice that don't have to be horny, but they're just tired of fighting.
All right.
My interest is now
peaked
in the concept
explain.
Of mouse husbandry.
Yeah, I like this.
All my dogs and cats are rescues.
Oh, that's nice. You're helping.
If pets were like the Stooges.
Okay.
And your high-end breeding dogs and cats were curly.
Okay.
I am down there adopting the unloved Joe Doritas of the cat world.
That's so hot.
I am down there while your curlies and shemps are in your high-end puppy farms. I am down at the rescue taking home Curly Joe. Oh,
the and Chinese Joe, crested.
And Joe Dorita.
Oh, that's
one eye missing.
You.
It yeah. doesn't bark. It burps.
Oh, but they're so yeah. grateful, right?
It sneezes a lot and something, 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 diarrhea.
Now, do dogs and cats or whatever, when you rescue them, they have a second imprinting happen? Because that first imprint's obviously not worked out for them.
No, it didn't work
that
out well.
That wasn't so good. But now, do they imprint again and go, you oh, saved
yeah,
me?
Yeah, I think they do.
I think they do, too.
I think they do.
I think it's an unlimited amount of unconditional love. I'm going to go get one today.
For the people that get their dogs out of breeders.
Yeah, that's not right.
They always go, God, the breeders, so, those people are so weird. Really? So let me get this straight. You meet somebody who's decided to make their living finding dogs and making them fuck.
Yeah.
And they're weird.
Yeah, that's weird, huh? That yeah. they'd be weird?
What do? I watch dogs fuck. I didn't know that was a job. It's a job?
Well, you know, they breed some of the good qualities out of these poor animals. And then, like, German shepherds have hip dysplasia.
Well, it's
there's
yeah.
all these problems that come from it.
Yeah, it's the reason that the royal family in England looks like a regular family reflected in a pool of water. You cannot have a limited genetic pool.
Did you see Tutankhamun, that guy? What's his name?
I don't know who you're talking
King
about.
King Tut. So they have pictures
oh,
of King
oh,
Tut.
Oh, you said Tutankhamun.
Yeah,
I thought you
I
said
messed that
two,
up.
I thought you said Tutankhamun.
Oh.
Like it was some mafia
it's
guy.
A big, big, or a heavyset woman.
It's the first
Tutankhamun.
Sumo wrestling mafia hitman. He
yeah.
just sits on
no,
you.
No, I'm talking about they found now the
Tutankhamun and yeah. Tutankhamun is yeah. like therapist and the rapist.
Yes, exactly. I'm
be
not good with words.
Be careful where you put your spaces in
yeah.
your texting.
Johnny's talking about I had a text that said, don't forget to visit the rapist, but it was actually about going to see a therapist. Anyway, so what I wanted to talk about, though, what was I just saying?
I don't know.
Shoot. Oh, Tutankhamun.
Right.
This dude, his mother and his father were brother and sister. They just found this
they
out.
I know that.
So they show, and the guy's got female hips and buck teeth. They found the what do you
really?
Call that thing, the ground? Like it's already, the guy's dead.
The pyramid?
The sarcophagus. What is it
sarcophagus.
Called? That's it. They found that. And they were looking at the guy, and they go, oh, my God, he was ugly as sin
he's
because
totally
his mother and father. So he had a club foot.
He's like the kid in Deliverance.
Yes. He's got a club foot. He's got wide hips, and he got buck teeth because they thought they'd keep the bloodlines clean, not knowing oh, that's not what's going to happen. They're going to have hip dysplasia, this German Shepherd.
Oh, in that way, Tutankhamun is a lot like those little dogs that can't breathe because their noses are too dented
in. Yes, it's a lot like that. It's like a bulldog.
Right.
Who was, I think, a leader at like 12 or 13. He was already leader. So they didn't want to let everyone in on it.
Right.
But the truth was, he couldn't walk anywhere. He had a club foot. I don't know if you know this, Johnny, but they said he won all these chariots, but he couldn't ride in a chariot.
Well, that's like Kim Jong-il.
They just
lie. He was the fifth Beatle. He was born 12.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine if he did join the Beatles, what that would look like?
I think it would be fantastic.
It'd be a fucking hit is what it would be.
Now, in the movie Deliverance, did they give Ned Beatty the whole script?
I can't imagine he read that and went, yeah, I'm in. He probably went like, it's a rewrite thing.
Yeah. Hey, we're sending over a new scene. We're going to shoot it today.
Goldenrod pages, though. Look for those tomorrow.
He's already in the woods. He can't get out.
Yeah.
In the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes movie, Michael Clarke Duncan played a gorilla leader. And I just wanted to have been, when the agent called, Michael, Tim Burton wants you to be in a movie. What am I going to play? A military figure? I haven't seen the entire script. Why don't you toddle on over there?
Those people probably really need to have someone vetting their scripts. It's a word I picked up.
Nice. Yeah. That's one of those things. There's movies they spend $200 million on them, and they'd be like, it didn't work.
Yeah.
I walked out of Interstellar thinking, where do I get my signature so I don't have to pay this ticket?
There's a lot of movies out there now that are like repeats of the same thing.
Well, now they did a movie, and halfway through the movie, they start playing the remake of the movie you just paid to see.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's like a backwards way.
You get your big winter plans.
Well, right now I'm looking at how do I follow through on my New Year's resolution.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Well,
I started smoking cigarettes at 50. Uh-huh. Mostly it was just because I would sit there with my mother. She got nothing to do. And I started smoking. I noticed how happy it made her to have someone else to smoke with.
Sure.
First, I wasn't even inhaling.
Right.
But these things are crazy, the way that they get into your system. You can't get it
out. You are discovering in the year 2015 that cigarettes are addictive.
Yeah. So at 50, I only smoked for this 1 year at 50. That's it. I never smoked before, and I'm not going to smoke again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get that out of my system. You got to give something up.
You got to give something up.
But when you give something, you got to pick up something.
Sure.
So I was thinking maybe you had some ideas of what I could do instead of that.
I've never had the cigarette addiction, but I'm telling you, those McDonald's fruit pies.
Wait, what?
Because they're so hot inside.
Yeah, but that's not good. That burns the roof of your mouth.
Well, yeah, but you're not smoking.
Burn the roof of my mouth, and then I won't want to smoke because it'll hurt.
Scorched earth policy. Sowing your field with salt.
I was going to get
hypnotizing. Your mouth
and
the salt is a fruit pie.
I would imagine the McDonald's fruit pie is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, you can get hypnosis in that way that you think you're a duck and you don't want to smoke. Because you can't get your pill around the cigarette.
What about every morning, instead of having that 7 a.m. smoke?
Oh, God.
I'll go over to McDonald's and eat a fruit pie, burn the roof of my mouth, and I won't smoke all day.
Yeah,
it'll cost me, what is that? What are they, $3?
Yeah, $2.59, and then you're done for the day.
I think this is a good plan. Hypnotism was going to cost me $150 each time.
Who says hypnotist?
Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a weird thing to choose, but maybe nothing else has worked. You realize, wow, you know what I'm really good at is bullshitting.
Yeah. I wonder if high school guidance counselors go to bed at night going, just please don't let anybody come up to me and say, hey, Mr. Barkley, how are you? I'm a hypnotist now.
Or what if there was one guy who was this guidance counselor who had always wanted to be a hypnotist?
Right.
So everyone who comes in, he's like, you know what I see for you?
Hypnotist.
He tries it like 2,000 times, and finally one girl named Kate goes, all right.
You know, they have that big thing in Denver where they're listening to everybody's cell phone conversations.
I didn't know that.
Every cell phone conversation in the world, everything you've ever thought. Everybody knows everything now.
Wow.
In all of that information, one thing they've never heard, now that I've worked through all of my emotional shit, I can concentrate on being a ventriloquist.
You sure?
No.
Hasn't been said.
No guy has ever answered the question, what do you do for a living with ventriloquist, and then gone on to get laid that night.
I wonder how many ventriloquists get asked, what do you do?
What do you do? I'm a ventriloquist.
Yeah, but what do you do, though?
And the follow-up question, here's what comes. What do you do? I'm a ventriloquist. 3, 2, 1. Where are you going?
Johnny, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That sums up my whole life right now.
If you are a ventriloquist, this is what I suggest you do.
Yeah.
You say that you are a doctor.
Yeah.
With a ventriloquist dummy.
This is my patient.
Yeah. What you do is, I'm a doctor. This is a CPR dummy. I was just teaching a class. I do it because I feel like I should give back to the community. Oh, my God. They'll be on your knob like it's Christmas candy. If they see your CPR dummy talking,
yeah,
you will not be having sex that evening.
There is something about when somebody's trying to come
through.
Is
Jeff Dunham married?
No.
We got to find that
out. No, he couldn't be.
If he is married, his wife is always thinking, is he with me or is he pretending I'm Peanut? Or worse, Walter.
Holy smoke.
People love puppets.
A nice guy.
I'm sure he's a lovely person.
Because Rich Little did a great impression, but no joke. Unfortunately, he's just repeating what the other comedian had once said. And so it's sort of like a history lesson.
Yeah, and you wouldn't laugh, but you'd clap because you felt bad.
You liked that he could do Johnny Carson. No one else is doing it at that time. It was before Kevin Spacey.
Oh, sure. There would be no Kevin Spacey if it wasn't for Miss Little.
Because Kevin Spacey's actually funny with it.
He does a good Johnny
funny.
Carson.
It makes it funny, whereas Rich Little was sort of like the repeat of it.
Yeah.
It was sort of like, yeah, you want to hear that thing you heard? I got that.
Yeah.
I got
here it is.
One. Yeah, and here's your Nixon, here's your Carter, here's your this, but it was
but
never.
Kevin Spacey makes it his own.
Okay, I didn't say he was great. I just said he was good. It's everywhere. It's all over the YouTube. You know, my niece and my nephew were showing me Kevin Spacey doing Carson. They don't even know who Carson is.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's what he says. I didn't know Kevin Spacey was that popular.
You know why they know him? He's in the new, not Halo, but the hell's the name of that game? It's
he's
like,
in a game.
He's in a game, and it's him. And he's through the whole game. He's the one telling them what to do. I've seen him playing it. What the hell's it called?
I have no idea.
Great War Hero.
Gnip-gnop?
Gnip-gnop, no.
Operation?
No.
The most high-end game I ever played was the Twilight Zone pinball machine.
What's that?
It was a pinball machine, but it was Twilight Zone theme.
I played it with you, for God's sakes.
Outside of that, I'm all board games.
Remember when we first got Pong?
Sure.
Jesus Christ, we didn't leave the house for 2 weeks. We've been playing Monopoly since sixth grade. We left it behind.
And then, boop. We thought our heads would explode.
We did, but we didn't even talk to each other. It was so tense. Do you remember that? We'd be silent for an hour. All you did was like, oh!
I know.
Oh! The tragedy of the ball going by.
You know, now
it was rainy day tennis for us.
Now it's like, you can have a life and a career where you can play this game.
Yeah.
You have a choice.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be married. You don't have a job. You just play this game.
I really think games have replaced the internet problems that other people had prior.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I can go on from that.
I don't think we have to.
I'm Johnny Condon.
I'm still Robbie Sullivan. We're here if you need us.
Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston.
Batman and Superman. A deeply traumatized orphan and a guy from outer space whose home planet blowed up real good. As fictional characters, they are as unassailably iconic as American, as Sherlock Holmes is British, or Tarzan is jungly. And although both Batman and Superman fight crime, stand up for the little guy and represent truth, justice, and all that stuff, their creations, both of them, have a dirty little aspect that doesn't quite square with their image. In fact, in terms of big business towards the little guy, their stories each have a fine example of good old Tennessee horse fucking. Superman was created in 1938 by a young comic writer and artist team, Jerry Siegel and Joel Shuster. They were literally teenagers at the time. To quote comic book eminence Alan Moore, the two Cleveland teenagers had crafted a near-perfect and iconic fantasy which spoke to something deeply rooted in the psyche of working America, propelled to Earth, and more specifically America, from an exploded home world during infancy, the character, like many of his readers or their parents, was an immigrant. I end quote. Superman appeared in National Allied Publications comic book Action Comics, number one, published in June 1938. That company was owned by two gentlemen named Harry Donenfeld and Jack Liebowitz. Superman appeared in Action Comics No. 1, published in 1938 by Harry Donenfeld and Jack Liebowitz's company National Allied Publications. Under the painfully ironic and retrospect title, Superman, Champion of the Oppressed. For the story, Donenfeld and Liebowitz paid Siegel and Shuster $130, along with a short and simple contract that the boys signed without even having a lawyer review it. And for that amount of money, $130, split two ways, all the rights to Superman were sold. As Drew Friedman, a guest on this very podcast two episodes ago, wrote in his excellent book, Heroes of the Comics, Siegel and Shuster did oversee the Superman comics and newspaper strips for nearly a decade, and they were paid a decent salary for that. But Donenfeld and Leibowitz grew crazy rich. But let's be honest. We're talking about Superman, the champion of the oppressed. So it would stand to reason that Donenfeld and Leibowitz, who held the rights, would see that their contract was, at the very, very, very least, somewhat usurious, that it took advantage of two naive teenagers who did not even have or retain legal counsel. You would think that they would be open and understanding to the concept of Siegel and Shuster being entitled to even the smallest slice of the ownership pie. After all, they made the pie. And for that, they were told,
"You get nothing! You lose! Good day, sir!"
Okay, then. So, in 1946, they asked, politely, if they could be properly compensated for their efforts, through a lawyer. And they were told,
"You get nothing!"
So they sued, and they were awarded a modest settlement, less than $100,000, and for that, they lost their byline and abdicated all of the written credit for their creation. While National Allied Publications, which came to be known as DC Comics, made millions. This led to a back-and-forth legal wrangle that went on for years as the two tried desperately to get Donenfeld and Leibowitz's company, the admittedly legal copyright owners of The Champion of the Oppressed, to provide even the slightest shadow of their fair share.
"You get nothing!"
Finally, in 1975, it was announced that Warner Brothers, DC Comics' parent company, was producing a big-budget Superman film. Siegel, now working as a file clerk, and Shuster, practically blind, led another lawsuit that, if only because of the bad publicity for Warner Brothers, led the company to restore their credit and provide them a modest yearly stipend. Modest. One wonders, were the champion of the oppressed to land on this planet today, whose side he would have been on? What would Batman say? Batman, created by Bob Kane. That's what the comic says. That's what the credit at the beginning of all those movies say. And Batman, who better to stand up for the little guy? The guy who can't take care of himself. Again, I steal shamelessly from Drew Friedman's Heroes of the Comics. After the success of Superman in 1938, National Allied Publications was in search of more, as they were coming to be known then, superheroes. He came up with a loose concept for a character he called the Batman and showed it to a guy named Bill Finger. Bill Finger was a writer who had been hired by Kane. Finger took Kane's design, a man in reddish tights and reddish boots, wearing a Lone Ranger mask and two stiff wings like the flying monkeys from The Wizard of Oz. Bill Finger took this design and changed it. Under Bill Finger, the Batman wore a cape instead of wings. He wore a cowl instead of a mask. And he was dressed all in black, not all in red. Finger wrote the first script for Batman Comics, where he established that Batman had an alter ego. He was also a millionaire named Bruce Wayne. Over time, Finger created a sidekick for Batman, a young ward named Robin, and an arch nemesis who he based on Conrad Veidt's appearance from the film The Man Who Laughs. Finger called this villain the Joker. Uncredited. All uncredited. Kane had worked out a deal with National Allied Publications, providing him with permanent and sole credit for Batman. This despite his somewhat mitigated level of contribution. Finally, years, decades later, long after Batman's television and movie success, well towards the end of his life, Bob Kane belatedly acknowledged Finger as a, quote, contributing force to the creation of The Dark Knight. Some would say too little too late. But sometimes, when your option is,
"So you get nothing!"
too little too late is the best you can expect. To get the full story on these and many, many other famous creators from the golden age of comics, please get Drew Friedman's amazing Heroes of the Comics. How does one get their hands on it? It's simple. Go to danagould.com. click on our Amazon banner, go to Amazon and shop away. For Drew's book or any other goddamn thing, you get what you want, and for not one penny more, Amazon kicks us a little you-know-what-ski to keep the lights on. And while I'm tugging on your coat sleeve, let me ask you a question. Is your phone not hilarious and or annoying enough? We can help. We now have ringtones for sale. Remain seated. One is a custom-made political talk with two guys from Boston ringtone by Johnny Condon and Robbie Sullivan. And the other is a special You Ain't Gonna Be No Astronaut ringtone in honor of Little Richard. Don't have an iPhone? Don't use iTunes? No problem. Go to danagould.com and click on the store menu. And don't forget, click on down to comedyfilmnerds.com for Bevel Aqua Heating and Air Conditioning t-shirts, Dana Gould Hour t-shirts, and of course, signed CD and DVD sets. What's that you say? Please do one more ad before the show continues? Oh, okay. Casper Mattresses is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the average price. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealings with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the customer. That's what the internet does. They make an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Mattresses can often cost you well over $1,500, which is true. But Casper mattresses cost just $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size. Casper mattresses have just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two things I might say about myself. Two technologies, latex foam and memory foam, come together for better nights and brighter days. And all Casper mattresses are made in America. They have a risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on a Casper mattress for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com, Casper.com/Dana, and using the promo code Dana. Okay, more show.
Make sure you get yours and enjoy it now.
With, say, the Bruce Jenner situation, because there's like, you can't joke about it, makes me really want to joke about it. Not because I have any issue with him. I have issues with people who have roped off segments of humanity, and they have a case. I'm not arguing the opposite case, but it's like, we want to be treated as equal, but also protected from this entire realm of the human experience.
Right.
I think in time that changes, and you can probably make a joke about it in 10 years.
Best thing that Dana Gould I've ever witnessed. I did a show with Dana Gould. I don't know how the justice system let this happen. It was a big show, and Dana...
I'm right here, aren't you?
Dana had just come from he'd gotten chosen as a juror on a murder trial, and you're going to tell Dana Gould that he cannot go talk. You're not supposed to talk about it. God, you give this fucker a microphone. That guy goes up and he goes, it was this whole thing. Like, it rhymes with schmurder. He goes, I can't say what it is. It rhymes with schmurder. And then he just leaves like, guilty. Like, hundreds, like a full, it was like a full airport hangar of people. I was like, who the fuck would pick this guy? It's like, everybody else is dismissed. I want that Simpsons writer. Yeah, that's the one.
And fragile Frankie Merman sending you up the river.
A young rapper named Bobby Shmurda was in the audience that night. And it's like, that shall be my name.
How long did that go on?
That was a two-week trial, murder trial, gang trial. And what was interesting was members of the opposite gang, whose guy was going to... Who ended up going to jail.
Streets or Sharks?
They were both great dancers. Guys were giving gang signals in the thing, so I actually heard this exchange between a lawyer and a witness. When you heard your brother had been murdered, how did you feel? I don't remember. Like, maybe that giant guy doing this should be escorted out of the courtroom. So this one guy, says while he's being interviewed, look, when this happened, I was in jail. That was how he was saying, I didn't kill my brother. I was in jail. So then the other lawyer goes, why were you in jail? And he goes, I committed a hate crime. And he goes, what was it? I beat up a homosexual. Okay. Then they bring up the sister, the most lesbian-y woman you could get to play the sister.
It was really on the nose.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been too much in a movie. Like, eh, it's a little on, yep, on the nose. She sits down and then they go, is this your brother? Yeah. He goes, do you also have a brother named Enrique? And she goes, yeah. It's this whole crazy family drama.
Oh, my God.
But he's now a guest of the state.
Were you nervous, like, putting him in jail because he was in a gang?
No, you just want to go home. For those of you who've never been, like, in a trial, like, he had a public defender, and PDs do a great service, and I know that he was like, maybe he did do it. And if he didn't do it, I'll grant you, it's likely he did something else. It was
he's
so...
Like, now, if you excuse me, I have to go prove that evolution doesn't exist. Yeah.
He was the worst lawyer, and now his client is in jail. So, you know. Yeah, but it is one of those things, like, don't tell me you can do anything but touch this water bottle. You know,
but I
do enjoy finding ways to make jokes about subjects that put people on edge. Like, you could say about Bruce Jenner, yeah, he was so humiliated by being in the Kardashians that he had to change his entire identity. That's not a hateful joke. But people go like,
And then the pendulum swings the other way, and this was so evident with...
He does look a lot like Kate Mulgrew, I am just going to say.
If you look at, like, the Super Bowl commercials this year, there were barely any attempts at humor, but so many of the commercials were fucking sad because they're like, well, we can't make anyone laugh anymore without pissing people off, but we could just make them feel shitty about themselves.
That one was
like
so,
the dead kid
that's
commercial.
That's a dead kid. Did you miss this?
I didn't know. Oh, yeah. I didn't see it.
Oh, my God. Okay, it was amazing. It's a Prudential life insurance ad.
It's nationwide.
Nationwide. It's a little boy. It's a nationwide. He's this little boy. It's an adorable little boy who's got to be like, what, 4 or 5? And he was basically like, I'll never get my first kiss. You know, I'll never get to graduate from college. I'll never get to do it. Basically, and he's riding his bike, and then he goes,
I didn't get to go to Sketchfest.
Yeah, and he goes, because I died. And then it just shows, like, basically the remnants
of, like... A bathtub overflowing with water, and then goes, you can prevent accidents.
Yeah, and then apparently the rest, all of America, like, every kid who's watching is like, wait, is he dead? Like, I don't get it.
Not to mention people who, like, lost their kid that year, like, I'm going to put on the Super Bowl and feel good about myself. What?
And by the way, how fucked up is that kid going to be? You know what I mean? He looks like a little angelic, tiny Fred Savage. Like, he's like a 5-year-old Fred. How into making money are those kids' parents? Like, just say it. Just say it, Robbie. Just say it. Because I die. You know, like, just say that. In the waiting room.
I will just say, having cast children in a pilot and had to deal with their parents, you take a Karen Silkwood shower that day when you go home. You cannot get clean enough.
I used to work for a casting director, and these poor, like, the parents would be like, show your resume. Yeah. I mean, you know, the kids, like, literally, they're like 3 or 4, and they're like walking up with a resume. Yeah. Like, it was...
We would,
like,
tell them, now go back out, tell your mommy did great, and you'd like your childhood back.
Imagine the kids who didn't get the Because I Died role. The parents are like, if you were that fucking sad in the audition, you would have gotten this shit.
People would think you were dead, but no.
And there was, like, a domestic violence commercial, and there was, like, these...
Well,
like,
they had to put that one on because people tend to beat the fuck out of their wives after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and they're the players, but...
That's understandable because people lost a game.
There were two different amputee commercials. There were kid amputees. There
was one of them was a plug for 2.5 Men.
And puppies are
amputee commercials?
Yeah, a few.
For about what was the product?
What was the product?
What is it?
It was mostly all car commercials for the first half of the
Super
Bowl.
The woman amputee drove a great car. And the child amputee, what was he selling?
Not sneakers. And what's great is, seriously, it's not political at all. The biggest mistake people make is the false assumption that leaders lead and that culturally gay marriage is a great example of the trans communities demanding to be recognized. And then the leaders follow and culture catches up. And I think what you're having now with all this stuff is just sort of this cultural hangover from so much change in such a short amount of time. And I think that people will get over it. And then humor is almost like one of the final shading of the drawing. Like, then you can chill out. You're, you know, running in the herd of humanity. You want to be able to make, to, in theory, you shouldn't say, like, you can't make a joke about me. Nobody is exempt from the human
experience. I also read something in the 90s that said, political correctness is left-wing thinking through right-wing means. Is that true? I don't even know if that's true. Sounds like
oh, that. I like, yeah, I would that's say amazing. That's exactly
Toronto
right.
Toronto Star, 1992.
All that clickbait on Huffington Post, and it's like, yeah. And it's every day there's something about the Kardashians. Every
on
day.
Huffington Post, oh, so yeah, fuck them too.
Yeah,
man.
It's like, Kim Kardashian holds a purse at an airport. Click. They have phraseology that they know attracts people, like, this picture of a dog eating peanut butter will make you appreciate the concept of existence. Yeah. You have to see Benedict Cumberbatch's new bike.
I'm reading a book that addresses this before the internet. It was written by a guy named Neil Postman, and it's called Amusing Ourselves to death.
I know that book.
And it's a brilliant...
It's How to Watch the News.
Well, no, it's a brilliant book about when we went from print to visual, to video, TV, when we went to print to TV, it was a different ballgame. Lincoln and Douglas. I mean, just one example, and he uses this example. The Lincoln-Douglas debates used to last 9 hours. This is not... Some of them lasted 2 days, yes. And people loved it.
Right.
They would go and have dinner. They would go and have dinner and come back for the rest of the debate. Today it's like, he's a pussy, and that's it.
Yeah. They would debate for 50 minutes, and then bare knuckle box for 10. And then it would be what
you have
the
to
end.
Take off the hat, Abe.
Yeah. If you scored more than a good point, you could use a board with a nail in it. But all of that stuff makes me crazy. And there was a really amazing
There's
article.
So much of it is the problem.
Pete Townsend once said made an analogy of being in show business. It's like living in a trash can full of shit, and your job is to keep it out of your mouth. But that's how I just feel about
I love that.
Yeah, it's just like living in the media culture now. And there was a great article that I did see. It was like, compared what Angelina Jolie did this year to what Kim Kardashian did this year. And it was like, spearheaded the UN awareness of child abuse and did a calendar with her ass.
That's great.
And the Huffington Post printed the article. Like, isn't it great that this person's actually doing something worthwhile with their fame and this person?
While they promote the other shit.
But at the same time, then the next day, Kim Kardashian wears a necklace in a car. What?
That's why I love Bill Hicks, who attacked the people who I think are responsible for a lot of this, which is marketers. And it's all about demographics and how to get the click and how to get the views.
And
when Hicks did that thing about marketing, oh, I know what Bill is doing here. You know that whole bit?
No.
Oh, where Bill said, if you're in marketing, by the way, if you're an advertiser, just kill yourself. Just kill yourself. And then he said, oh, I know what. Then he's doing the audience voices. Oh, Bill, I know what you're doing. You're going for the 18 to 34. No, I'm not. Just kill yourself. Just kill yourself. Oh, that's a great bit. I forget what album it was on.
Very strange story about Bill Hicks. We were walking around Disney World.
You and Bill Hicks?
Yes. And he said to me.
I never met him.
He was a nice guy. And he said, man, I can't sell out Caroline's on a Saturday night. And they're dredging Lake Erie to put in bleacher seats for Carrot Top.
I did meet Dana in the late 90s. It was like my first job. I mean, I was like 21 and I spent like 48 weeks with Dana Gould and like the guy who played Kenny Banyan with all these like dark male comics. And I'd already had a pretty dark sense of humor, but what I could laugh at by the end was so awful. The first day that I met Dana, it was his birthday, and like, you know, you're on your best behavior. It's like on the NBC, we brought him a cake, and like everyone's just being polite, and it was just sitting on the, you know, the little snack table. Then he was like, are you fuckheads gonna eat my cake or what? You know, like, and then he This is one of those things where I'm so embarrassed that I left. This shows
this
you how dark...
This is a perfect example of what you're talking about.
Yes, this is an example of what... It was one of the funniest things, and it was so inappropriate. And the fact that I laughed rather than went, hey, Dana, that's not okay. And that's when I knew I'd crossed over to the dark side. Okay.
I wouldn't have done this today.
Okay, so Dana... To be fair, Dana was playing this character, Jimmy Clark. We were in an office.
I almost had a monkey kill me.
And they had, oh, that's right. And he was also, they put him in like a horse harness and they attached a desk to him and dangled a carrot in front of him. And he had to like try to get at the carrot and drag the desk across. Like that was just Dana's character.
The show was basically
Dilbert.
A surrealistic version of The Office before The Office and without the humor.
Or the popularity or numbers. So classic multicam episode idea where you have a Renaissance festival in an office where they had like a real pig roast. They brought in like a real rotting pig and there's like a sword fight in the middle of like an office. Clearly your stunned silence says it all.
Imagine this setup but hotter and with a rotting pig.
So that was the day that
No.
Too soon. That was the day
I'm rotting over here. Come on.
Oh, that just, the impression made it even worse.
That was the day that Michael Hutchence died from NXS. And it hadn't come out yet how he killed himself. We didn't know what happened. But we had this.
Turns out he was doing something NXS.
Yeah.
If only Twitter was around in 1997.
Well, what that I should did. Be your throwback Thursday. So we had this hairdresser that was on the show named Desmond, who also performed in drag, was a drag queen, and whose grandmother also happened to die that morning. Meanwhile, Dana and I are backstage. They had already said, and action. Dana and I are about to go on and film, and Dana is standing backstage in a...
jester's outfit.
No, you had a man suit on, but with a head of a court jester.
Right.
Basically...
There's no bottom to my life.
Okay, so wait, what do you want to add in? What do you want to add in?
NBC thought that this was must-see TV.
Yeah.
So what's important to know that morning is we come in for makeup in the morning and Desmond is in the room and he says that his grandmother died and I go, oh, Desmond, I'm so sorry. And he goes, oh, it's okay. Man, not a big deal. I didn't really know her that well. He kind of dismissed his grandmother's passing.
Still,
when you're a drag queen and your grandma dies, think of all the free clothes.
I think that's where he went with it.
So we're on.
You find out that Michael Hutchence has also shit the bed.
So then we are backstage and we're about, they're like, and action. And then he comes up to do one final little tweak of Dana's court jester hat. And it's really cramped quarters. We're all just shoved backstage. And Desmond finds out that Michael Hutchence has died. And he goes, oh my God. Oh my God, Michael Hutchence died? How did he die? And our cue is, and go. Dana just looks at him and he goes, he beat himself to death with your grandmother. I burst into laughter. So I'm like so ashamed. I keel over. That's what I crossed over. I am from a farm town. My soul is so black. I couldn't stop laughing. And then Desmond storms off. And then Dana has like a red phone to like FTD florist. He immediately, it was.
Yeah, I had to send a lot of flowers. I had to apologize to.
It was so smart.
Entire,
it was such a good joke, but so
the entire,
awful. It was so well written. That was the thing. It was so timely. It was so well written. Like that comic mind, I was like so appreciating. Like, who the fuck thinks of that? And then who doesn't stop themselves from saying
that? Yeah. That's the thing. That's the thing where it gets into schmurder and wanting to make jokes about 9/11. It's hard to not go there. And I was stunned that he was more upset about Michael Hutchence than his grandmother. That was my...
You were making a satiric point.
I was trying to show up for his grandmother.
Yes.
Honestly, that might have been the best constructed joke in a moment. And I'm for an audience of one.
It was certainly the funniest joke associated with that show.
I really felt so dirty about myself. And that's when I knew. That's when I also knew, like, I try to then go to, like, girlfriends, like, baby showers and show up. And, like, what I would joke about, they'd all just stare at me like, what is like, what has become of you?
This is why you belong sitting with three guys who look like they could have been the doctor from The Human Centipede.
When I was a kid, the odds of going to Disney World were right up there with going to Saturn. Like, you know, the idea that we would be, that anything would be done for us.
Yeah.
It was off the table. Like, where are you going to go? Wherever our parents want to go, and then we will be brought along.
It would be funny if Disney World suddenly had like a left-wing guy designing stuff. Like, instead of fake France and all that crap, they had, welcome to what the world would be like without media. Oh, and it's like characters just like I.F. Stone, you know, iconoclastic journalists who got who got pushed to the periphery of their profession because of their views are just coming up to you in costume, like being really intelligent. And kids are just crying.
Get I.F. Stone away from me.
It's the Hall of Marshall McLuhan.
Daddy, I don't want to go into amusing ourselves to death again. It's like just a, like you said, it's like a hall.
Yeah. The media is the message cavalcade. That's one of the great things about having kids is you get to sort of correct the things about your childhood that you wish were different.
Yeah.
Like, I do, you know, I take my
Is it a lot? It's super a lot of fun, right?
Because I
friend, who's one of the biggest left-wingers alive, went to Disney World with his grandniece or something, and he said, you know, I really liked it.
Yeah, this, you know.
He had to admit it. He goes, I really liked it. I love the electric light thing.
They do a great job, and it's clean. There's a lot of great stuff about Disney. It's very clean. Apparently, like, out of every 20 people, one is an undercover security person. Like, the longest the longest a kid has ever been lost is, like, 20 minutes. 8-year-old girl on a pink shirt named Ruby. Boom! They got her, because it's like everybody, eyes
all,
everywhere.
What about all this crap I heard about their employees are, you know, treated crappily?
Yes, they're beaten, they're beaten regularly, which is why they're so docile. Again, I don't know. That could be true. I know people that work there that love it. They're really into it. I mean, it's a lifestyle, and it's a lifestyle based in like a fantasy world.
I think I would go nuts.
Well, see, I'm kind of envious.
Really?
Yeah. There are people that just live for Disney World and Disneyland, and they go and they trade pins, and their life is all about Disneyland. Kind of wish...
You could be that person?
I kind of wish that I could just climb into a...
Total fantasy, though.
Yeah, into a fantasy world and just not come out. Like, that might be great.
Yes.
You had to really not... Like, they don't know who's the
president. Like, whenever they watch an ISIS video, they just see Goofy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like an evil Goofy.
Allah Akbar. God is great. Don't lose your head.
We do an existential Goofy.
Yeah, we did existential Goofy. I think we did Goofy as Colonel Kurtz.
I saw a snail crawl across the edge of a razor blade. We're all so hollow. At the end of the day, the futility of existence will hollow out what you think is your soul to reveal you to be nothing but an empty box. Okie doke. The futility of existence gnaws at me like a hungry bird. You see, Donald Duck over there, that sound and fury signify nothing to tell of an idiot. Hey, Donald, what are you going to do today? Here's what you're going to do. Wake up, live, sleep, and then one day you'll be dead. And the whole thing was for nothing. Do, 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 do. Can't do nothing about old age decay. That's for sure. He's just walking through the park shouting that. You can't do nothing about old age.
Hey, Goofy, how can God exist in a world where children suffer?
He can't. Hey, we've got to have free will. Don't blame God. And also, we can't.
Yeah.
God's not here to help you with find your flip-flops. No. Boy, espresso makes you feel empty after a few of those.
ISIS is the doctor from the human centipede of foreign affairs. ISIS does the stuff that people just go, no, no. You can kill people. We're not saying you can't kill people. But you can't do it the way you're doing it. You can set people on fire from the sky.
No, that's the thing.
But you can't do it. It can't be like something from the wild, wild west that went awry.
ISIS is John Henry and the drones are the steam engine. Just racing to see who can kill more faster.
There is this like, they do not follow Marcus of Queensberry rules. they're so outraged. It's horrifying. But at what point will they defeat themselves by desensitizing people so much that people say, nah, all right.
When you make a Michael Hutchins joke to them.
Yeah. They covered him with peanut butter and threw him in a tank of weasels. All right, well, let's watch it. No, no. I don't know.
The most awkward at midnight moment that I ever had, we were taping, was the game was Unfriend Me. Things that you would say to make someone unfriend you. And this was January 2014. And that show, it's like super fun and you get confident. You're like, I could get away with this. And my last joke was, I miss you, Paul Walker.
Oh, no.
And that same reaction happens. And I just went, you win this round. And that reaction didn't happen. It just got even worse.
Yeah, you know it.
We can't make fun of that guy.
But he was alive.
I'm trying to figure out which humiliating story that I should tell. Okay. I used to do a thing at the end of my act where I would do a parody of a Morrissey song called Clown Fucker. See? My life has not been a waste. And when I would do it, I would close and I would go like, clown fucker, that's what they said. Alcoholics only. Clown, adult survivors of incest on this side of the room. Ta-da, clown fucker. Boom, dumb, get off. Walk off stage. I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh,
walk off stage.
Oh,
there's a woman standing there with three of her daughters, all of them sobbing. The woman has a hearing aid from 1948.
I always pictured her with a horn.
It's a big. It is the hearing aid David Lynch wore in Twin Peaks. It's a big thing.
And one of the daughters was the midget.
If only. I walk out, and she goes, I remember hearing aid, probably deaf. And I'm just walking to the dressing room, like, and I see these people crying. I'm like, what? Did they get bad news or something? And then she goes, how dare you? All of my daughters were incested by their father. And I'm just stunned. I'm literally, like, out of body. I can't think. And then the girl goes, thanks for ruining my birthday.
Wait, so deaf women, drag queen hairdressers, you have the weirdest rogues gallery. Your rogues gallery was created by Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, no, it was. It was so... What'd you say? I had stuff loaded. I was older and wiser than
right.
I was so when I worked with Arden.
Assess victims.
What I had loaded was, you think maybe the fact you could have heard something? How many was he going to incest before you hauled anchor out of there? You know, three strikes and you're out? How about one strike and you're out? How's that? That's a good one-strike problem. One time he does it and you're done. No, I just left.
Was your favorite show A Family Affair?
Yeah. My mother uses religion the way Suge Knight uses reverse. It's like, you abuse it. Good to have around, but it can be abused.
God, I could never connect my mother to Suge Knight. Unless he was an electroshock therapy nurse before he hit it big.
My mother once opened an oven just before the cake fell. Oh, God was really looking out for me today.
That's the level.
Yeah. I'm sorry about the earthquake. I've got a cake in the oven. I can't help you right now.
You know, when I try to believe in God, and this is probably too revealing, but when I try to believe in God, like I'll be like, okay, yes, there is something out there. And then as soon as something goes wrong, I just go immediately, nice, God. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, God.
Like, I blame that force immediately for trivial shit. I'm talking about if I ever start to believe in something, if like a bag of nuts fall on the floor of my car, I just go, oh, really, God? Is that what you want from me? Yeah. That? To pick up all of these?
Yes. But I,
that's why he doesn't exist in my life.
But I often think me complaining to God about my pilot not getting picked up is like my kids asking me why I made it rain. It's like, I have very little to do with that. Like, okay, like I'm trying to think of what fantasy world. Like, I like the Star Trek people. They got it down, man. You can really climb into a Star Trek fantasy world and never leave.
Isn't that a little scary, though?
Yeah, but in a succulent way.
It is in a, I guess it's, for me, it's like, I just go into, and it's always disappointing because my teams lose, but I go into this world where I think, like, for instance, I'm a huge hockey fan and I'm watching the Rangers right now, and I get so into these games, and I imagine it's like getting into Star Trek. Like, these players are playing for me.
Yeah.
I was talking about this with my shrink. Realizing that, yeah, these players, you think they're going to give you what you didn't get as a kid. Like, them winning is me winning, is what I've come to. And, like, I just wait for the next game. Like, Ryan McDonough is going to, you know, he's a defenseman for the Rangers, whatever it is. And yeah.
I only knew them from the 70s. I checked out when Brad Park retired.
I used to love Brad Park.
Yeah.
I've actually gotten better. As a kid, I used to, when the Rangers would lose in the playoffs, I remember taking a hammer. This was so long ago.
I'm listening.
This was so long ago that I was listening to the games on radio and loving it. Like, I used to love that play-by-play by voice. There was something really exciting about it.
We used to make fun of all the time because we had a reel-to-reel tape recorder when I was a kid.
I remember those,
and
too.
We did a parody of a Boston Bruins hockey game. And
you did?
The only joke I remember that my brother was doing was, Guy Lapointe to Guy Lafleur, Guy Lapointe to Guy Lafleur, Guy Lafleur.
That's such a kid thing.
And then you just hear me going, snot. Like, that was my joke. I said snot.
How old were you guys? You're in your 30s?
Yeah, we're in our 30s.
It was a Thanksgiving, and
I remember it was right after the Challenger blew up. So
we needed something to take our minds off of that great American tragedy.
To start the healing. We needed to start the healing. But yeah, there's like those things that you need some kind of relief. Like,
yeah.
That's why people get so into comic books, or like I'm famously into, like, you know, Planet of the Apes and stuff like that. It just makes me happy.
But the thing is that you have to have 1 foot in reality at least.
Yeah.
Or 1.5 feet.
Yeah.
And then you go to that. Ah, yeah. Like, you know, I put on the Rangers and I'm like, oh, yeah. For these 2 hours,
yeah,
I'm going to just get into the flow of this game and nothing else.
That's beautiful, though. Like,
honey, don't show me a slaughterhouse video now, sweetheart. The Rangers are on a power play.
Wait a minute. But what if you watched a slaughterhouse video to the audio play-by-play of a hockey game? That might be something.
It would short-circuit me.
Yeah.
There would be the pleasure coming into the horror, and it would just short-circuit me.
I would like to find the vilest pornography I can and listen to the West Side Story song. I feel pretty, oh so pretty.
If you feel pretty, you wouldn't be doing that.
Oh so pretty and witty.
I go one step further in the horror direction. I get the most vilest pornography, and I just have Walter Cronkite on a loop saying Kennedy was shot.
And then choking up like a little girl. Here's one I was proud of. I'm at a birthday party, and you know the kind of guy who has to make a speech at every party within 5 minutes? Can I just make a speech? Can I say one thing about everybody? And then now it's about 2004. Yeah, I didn't really want to have a birthday party today. And then I talked to my brother.
who lost two really close friends in the South Tower on 9/11. And I went at this party, what happened on 9/11? And heard this so loud. Boo! If you're going to pimp it out, I'm going to pimp it out.
You must have been in so much trouble for doing that.
Yeah.
It would have been more amazing if he just explained in detail what happened that day.
Well, it's a long story.
Early morning, everybody went to work.
Some people still have their doubts.
Of course, no Jews went to work. False flag! False flag!
I love that your anti-Semite impression is just a 1940s prospector.
But that's how, like, when you get angry at your side, it's like, I know the world is full of right-wing kooks, but then when the left-wing kooks are also just as annoying. Like, just so we're clear, George Bush is an idiot and an evil super genius, depending on what you need him to be on that given day. Okay, that's fine.
Atheists are just annoying as Christians when they start talking about what they believe.
The basic theory of fundamentalist Shiite atheists is you're a fucking idiot if you think you know what happens after you die, because I know.
Well, what's that Roseanne joke? Right-wingers would hate Jesus Christ if he came nowadays because he's a liberal Jew.
Yes. And he hung out with... He liked poor people.
Yeah.
And he was black. Yeah. The story of Christ was the first episode of the Adam West Batman. They put him in this death trap, and then he escaped 3 days later because they didn't stay to get the job done. They fucking walked away. Just imagine, like, Burgess Meredith as Pontius Pilate. Just,
I wish I could stop imagining it.
You crossed us for the last time.
I love horror movies so much, but I can't get
you
into,
do
like,
still, huh?
Because oh, totally, I, yeah, totally. But old stuff, like, I can't
old
get into
stuff.
Or new stuff that's
no, but
good.
Isn't, like, the new stuff too?
Well, I'm not into slasher or gory
okay,
movies,
that's
but
what
I love
I'm
like
about.
I love, like, I thought The Ring was fantastic.
I don't know that one.
The Ringu, the Japanese movie.
It was good?
In like late 90s. It's phenomenal.
You need to text
yeah.
me some of these good ones.
Yeah, no, there's always.
I used to love horror movies, and
last year the what is it the The Conjuring, great.
Oh,
if it has like a ghost or a monster in it,
you yeah. love monsters.
Yeah, like Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim was great. Godzilla for the 11 seconds
yeah,
Godzilla was in.
Yeah,
Godzilla
yeah,
was great.
Yeah.
No,
the
I
new
just
one,
love
the new
stuff.
Godzilla. I watched the new Godzilla.
Yeah. What's amazing about the new Godzilla is they can make Godzilla look completely believable, but they can't give Bryan Cranston a wig that doesn't make him look like Davy Jones. I was on a plane sitting behind Mickey Dolenz.
Oh, I've met Mickey Dolenz.
Mickey Dolenz, every day, someone comes up to him and says, "You were my favorite monkey." That must be an odd thing to hear.
Yeah.
You're my favorite monkey. Even more than Bonobo? Yes, more than Bonobo.
Did you say hi? Or?
More than Mandrills. Yes, I actually have worked with him before. It was,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I worked with him before, so he was a...
Yeah.
It is weird, though. It's like you knew a lot of crazy people. He was huge.
And when they were huge.
Yeah, and a crazy time. And now he's just like schlepping around Southwest
Absolutely.
Airlines.
Absolutely. But I always wonder when I meet a guy like Dolenz, who was huge for basically a second. I mean, it was kind of a in like popular culture terminology.
Years, 67 to 70.
But it was huge. If they want to be told, "Hey, you were one," I think so. You were one of my favorite guys. I don't know. I feel like that's what they were known for,
no,
and they want that recognition.
Totally. Like whenever anybody comes up to me and says, "I love your podcast" or "I love your comment," you're always happy.
I love
to hear
that.
It.
I
you're
love
always
that.
Happy to hear.
I
it.
Wish
it's
Karen
all in-
would come up to me and say that. My wife, "Hey, I just love what you do.
I love what you do.
Really
I love
nice.
When you're home. It's all in how they do it."
say that, and then thank you, and now you have your day, I'll have your day. So they, hey, you're great. Oh, thanks. And
oh,
then
yeah.
They stand there, and I say, okay, now have a conversation with me. It's a no, no, that's a no.
I like what Todd Glass says. He turns the tables. Like if someone sees him in a supermarket and says, I really like your thing, Todd goes, really, thank you very much. You know, and he just follows them around being needy. And they're like, okay, take it easy. We're out of here. Honey, let's go.
That happened to me once with a musician that I was a big fan of. And
Yeah,
I met them at Tower Records. And it tells you how old the story is.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I said, I saw you at the Rat in Boston in 1985, and mm-hmm. you were with Peter Holzapfel from the DBs. Yeah. And then I couldn't get rid of him.
Oh, I know. That's Glass's routine. That's Glass's routine.
Okay, I got to go now. Okay. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. I got to go now. Bye-bye. I was thinking this today. I was talking about sitting by Mickey Dolenz. You know, anything that he does, people always talk about the monkeys. That's who he's known for. And you get to this point, at some point in your life, you do something that is, in terms of the public, is the thing that you can never top. And then the rest of your life, you're just like, yeah, and I also do this. I'm wondering if in jail, if that ever happens with Manson, he's like, can we do something? Can we talk about something I've done recently? I'm not just the 60s. For most people, like, there's just a small period of time where you're incredibly famous, and then the rest of your life, you're like, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I think that hurts more than being the level of obscurity I've always maintained. It's like, no, because it hurts.
I work hard at it.
It hurts to, I think, have gotten that once and then be relegated to like, yes, and I'll also take the Slim Jim. Yeah. And they're like, come on, sir, I need some ID or whatever it is.
Yeah. Do you have any current astrology magazines? You know, astrology needs to get more props than it gets. I'll give you a great example of how great astrology is.
Oh, man. I had to rip myself away from that shit. That's another
really?
Addictive. Well, I mean, there was a little period in my life where I was like, ooh, yeah. Yeah, because I knew someone who was very into, like, you know, you have a house in Mars. And all this, like,
yeah.
Like
my mother could do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. When it gets really deep, I forget what they call it. You're doing your chart.
Your chart, yeah.
It's like, it's a way of like abdicating
free will.
Yeah.
Well, Yoko Ono famously had like a staff astrologist. There was lucky day, lucky number, lucky time. And that's why Yoko Ono was always prepared. Nothing ever happened to her in her life that caught her off guard, that was bad luck. She was always prepared for every unforeseen situation.
Oh, my God. God.
I'm Did she Yoko. Call her astrologer that night? Did you read me everything?
You know what? I think the people who are really into astrology, when that happens, when a horrible tragedy like that happens, they're going, ah. They, in retrospect, go, ah, I did not see that Jupiter was ascending.
Of course, yeah, of course. It's
you
always
know what
explained,
I mean? Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God, I didn't see Jupiter ascending. Well, it was a shitty movie. Of course you shouldn't see it.
Now, I've seen the trailer for that. I'm not sure
it looks like a video game, which I stay away from.
I'm not sure it is a movie.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, it looks like...
I think it's a way to block a library bill in Congress.
Yeah, it looks like a photo montage of airbrushed van murals.
Yes.
Just because you can make anything happen, you don't have to. Just
By the
stop.
Way, my other thing, a guy I really kind of like on one hand, but now I'm starting to hate him, is Liam Neeson, and I just saw another trailer for another movie, which instead of the Taken series, him and Ed Harris now in this trailer are going, well, if you're coming after my family, I'm coming after your family. And I like Harris too.
Yeah.
But it's like all this, like, you're going to kill my family? I'm going to... And this is all Liam Neeson does now is go after people who have gone after his family.
Yeah.
And it just makes me
nervous.
It's
a very dangerous job to be related to Liam Neeson in a film.
Oh, my God.
He was just like an actor, like kind of a serious actor. He did stuff.
Yeah.
He was going to play Abe Lincoln in Lincoln and like out of nowhere, he just had Taken. And it was just this... And by the way, Taken's an awesome movie.
The first one?
The first one's fantastic. I haven't seen the other ones, but the first one's great.
Right.
And he has no arc as a character. He just starts killing people, and at one point he looks down and sees credits coming up on the screen, so he stops killing people and lets the credits go. And he was just like, now he's like an action star. He has this whole other career as an action star, which I think
he's a revenge star.
Yes. He's Charles Bronson.
He's the new Charles Bronson.
He's the new Charles Bronson. He's the Irish Billy Jack.
I have done a bit where I just come out. I don't even say hello to the audience. I just go, why are people still taking Neeson's children in films? Is he that inattentive? And then I've been informed that a lot of these movies in Taken 2 and 3, they're not even taking his kids anymore. They're just calling it Taken. Nothing's been even taken except maybe an ashtray or a cigarette lighter. You know, things that are
no one's kidding.
Something like that. No. But they're still calling it Taken.
Taken was such a visceral, like they took his daughter. It was unspeakable.
You love that.
And it was such a, every single guy goes, yeah, it's what I do. Every single thing in sight.
It strikes the primitive part of the brain.
Yeah.
You know, defending your family.
Yeah.
It was, like, oh, yeah, yeah. Not only would I put his balls in a juicer, but I'd make him drink that juice.
Yeah, totally.
And
I like the way he overpronounces his R's. Now I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to overpronounce my R's. I'm doing Sean Connery slowly.
Oh, you are doing slowly, Sean Connery. That's who I was wondering.
I'm slowly becoming Sean Connery with my sloppy S's. Listen. Now listen. Sean Connery. Who's still alive.
Is he?
Yep. People don't get old the way they used to. I think there's going to be another Indiana Jones movie.
With Harrison Ford?
I think there is, yeah.
Oh, God. Because he's not aging.
No, he's not.
He doesn't age.
Yeah. Are you excited about the fact that there's more Star Wars movies?
I was big into the first.
Because you were a teenager when they came out.
Yeah, I was super big into the first three. But I didn't give a damn about the next three. I just didn't care about them.
I was super into
the first. And I heard they sucked.
I was into the first two.
Yeah.
And I thought the third,
me too.
fourth, fifth, and sixth,
they lost.
They all sucked. Yeah. They all
The
sucked.
Third one lost me, but I love the first two.
The first two are fantastic. But what's amazing is that you could never have a hero of a movie as fey as Mark Hamill is in Star Wars. I mean,
That's kind of true, but
I was on my way to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. He is so whiny in that movie.
That is true.
He is so... If there's a bright spot in the universe, this is the planet it's farthest from. He should have a unicorn notebook. He should be writing in a unicorn diary half that movie.
That is
and
true.
By the way, I'm shitting on Mark Hamill. He's the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
He's the sweetest man ever.
I was going to say, where is he? He's another guy who was super big.
He's Luke Skywalker
in the new
movie.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's old Luke in the new movie. And
Are you excited about these?
They'll be fine. They'll be better than the other ones, I'm sure. I'm not madly in love with the new Star Trek movies, but I like them. I like them fine. But I'm at the point now where, like, I have kids, and I'm like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, unless it's really... Yeah. And sometimes things will, like, as I've said, ad nauseum, like, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, to me, was, I thought, better than it needed to have been. And so to that, I'm like, God damn it. I love you. I love you. There's a fine line where then it just becomes ridiculous. Like, I think Batman and Robin with George Clooney and Christopher O'Donnell it's like the Village People movie, Can't Stop the Music, directed by Nancy Walker. It's ridiculous. It's like Starlight Express. But the last Christopher Nolan movie, to me, was also bordered on the ridiculous. It is Batman. It's not Potemkin. You know? It is called Batman.
Too ambitious.
Do you have to leech all the fun out of it?
Yeah.
Now I understand why Adam West is important. You need him. You need Adam West.
To keep the humor in it.
To balance the universe. To every yin and yang for every Christian Bale. You need an Adam West.
That's a great way to describe life, you know?
Yes. We've got it.
Your inner Christian Bale and your inner Adam West have to be both powerful.
That is finally We've landed on the theme of our show, To Every Bale a West. We've gotten it.
Starring Walter Houston.
And Whitney Houston. Walter Houston and his wife, Whitney.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbauer.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano. Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
Hey, let's get away from that diarrhea.